I'm going to tell you a few stories. All you have to do is listen.
Hello and welcome to another movie podcast. I am Oscar, and with me today is, as always...
Oh, Ralph.
Nearly always. This is episode number 64, and today what we're going to be doing, and what we always do on every show, we review three films of the... usually three newish films, in this case two, and then one marathon pick. We'll explain that later. The three films we're reviewing is Steve McQueen's latest film, Widows, which hella exciting. It's in theaters right now. The other one is a new Netflix original from the Coen brothers. I guess their first non-theatrical release movie, at least in a long while. And it's called The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. And then we'll conclude our show with that marathon pick I mentioned. It's part of our Steven Spielberg retrospective-ish marathon. We're going to be doing Hook, which is 1995, 91?
I think it's 91.
91, that old?
Yeah.
Okay, it's a 90s film.
Hook,
yes, the one with Robin Williams. That is what's on the docket for you today.
91.
You can send feedback, as always, to podmoviecast@gmail.com. Check out our website, which is otherpodcast.com. Otherpodcast.com is our website for anything we've ever done, including bonus episodes, previous marathons. We have all of our previous shows on there. We also have our top fives, top tens from the last 2 years when I started the website, and so on and so forth. Another thing we do here, which we're going to get into right now, is recent discoveries. Actually, I lied. I'm going to get into bonus first because I should tell you what the bonus episodes are. The way bonus works is that on our website, if you or anyone donates any amount to our show that month, they'll get a bonus episode that is just going to be for you guys. And then 5 months later, that bonus episode that was premiering just for you guys will come out to everyone, like universally. That way we can still hash out the review. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a lot of reviews out there. And so 5 months ago to this month, Hereditary came out. That's the movie I chose for the bonus, and that's what's coming out for everyone. If you donate this month, however, you get Overlord, which is still in theaters right now, and Raph and I had seen it already, and that's going to be coming out for you if you donate or not 5 months later.
I saw that on LIMAX.
I didn't. I saw it regularly, but yeah. Anyway, and now we're going to get into recent discoveries, which is basically what it sounds like. Stuff that Raph and I have seen independently from each other. We're going to talk about it here. Only one title does overlap with mine. But Raph, you're going to start us off with a green monster dude.
Ooh.
Right? It's a green monster dude?
I mean, is he a monster? I don't think he's a monster.
Well, what is he?
He's a Grinch.
But what is a Grinch? A Grinch? What
I don't know. He's like an offset of a who. Who cares?
There you go. I guess you're right.
There you go. Anyways, I saw the new Grinch movie because I have a kid, and it makes sense for me to watch a Grinch movie.
And you wanted to see it.
And I wanted to see it, yeah. A grumpy Grinch plots to ruin Christmas for the village of Whoville. So, in comparison, this is all animated.
Right, yeah. This is a DreamWorks? No.
Illumination.
Oh, that one. Right. I was confusing.
Yeah, you do. They did a good job. Overall, it was fun. I mean, it had funny moments. It wasn't as dark as the Jim Carrey one. I feel like that was a little bit more depressing.
I don't think I remember. I don't think I've seen that one.
Well, that's the live version of it, right?
Because Ross Howard, dude.
I don't know. He might have. I don't know. He's weird. And then this is starring Benedict Cumberbatch as the Grinch.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. Cameron Seeley as Cindy Lou Who. Rashida Jones as Donahue, and Pharrell Williams as the narrator.
As a narrator.
Really?
Narrator, yeah. Then that's about it. This is directed by Yarrow Cheney and somebody else, Scott Mosier, which I think we know who Mosier is.
Yeah,
Scott Mosier.
Sounds like that dude that did the...
he's a producer for all the...
Tarantino movies, right? No.
No, all the Clerks, the
Kevin Smith movies.
Kevin Smith movies, yeah.
Huh.
He started to do directing.
I guess so.
Yeah, I think he's got a couple more stuff coming out. Good for him indeed. Pay by numbers. I mean, if you've read The Grinch, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, it's not as dark or it's not as depressing, but it is kind of. The stuff is in there, obviously. It's a little bit more jolly. Let's just say that. It's a little bit more, it's funnier. Definitely toned more for kids and young adults, younger adults, like 12 as the max, I would say. Anybody after that could just either... you're not going to watch this movie because you are excited for this movie. But it was a fun watch. Leo liked it. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
I can't really, what do I want to talk about this movie?
Like, no, I guess I would say is it...
the fact that it's animated, everything looks good. Okay. Everything is played out well. The dog is super cute. This is the best thing about this movie, the dog.
Okay.
So he does all the errands for him, and he's super cute, and he's like almost like he's got his own personality without ever talking.
Okay. Okay.
So that's cool. That's like the saving. That's not the saving grace, but it's the best thing of the movie.
All right. So if you have kids, it's not a bad choice.
No, it's not a bad choice.
Okay. That's how we're gonna play that recommendation because I'm never gonna see it.
Right.
I don't think so anyway. And then the next film you have that you've seen, I also have, but
I should have said this in the last podcast.
Yes,
but
I took advantage. I was like, oh, he's gonna mention it on the next show. I should watch.
I will because you're gonna remind me.
Yes.
And this is Summer of '84. This is a horror movie. That is on Shudder.
Almost like a kind of horror movie.
Yeah, it's like it's mystery.
Yeah.
It's only on Shudder, Shudder.com, or Shudder, the streaming service. I'll read you the quick description. After suspecting that their police officer neighbor is a serial killer, a group of teenage friends spend their summer spying on him and gathering evidence. But as they get closer to discovering the truth, things get dangerous. Shitty this plot, but whatever. This is directed by Francois Simard. And two others, along with starring Graham Vercheer?
Verkery? Maybe.
Oh, Verkery also, I guess. Judah Lewis, Caleb Emery, Rich Sommer.
Yeah, Rich Sommer. Yeah, that's my motherfucker.
Yeah, Oscar, since we both saw this movie.
Who played his dad? That was the guy from Monk, isn't it?
Is it?
Jason Greig Stanford? Yeah, that's the idiot.
Oh
yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so the whole movie, I was like, where do I know him from? And I figured it out later. Anyway, so I think this movie is it's pretty good. It's solid. It's a solid movie. Don't expect actual horror in the movie until like it really earns it. Like the movie really wants to earn it, and it won't like just jeopardize a bunch of kids in the same way like a movie that's geared towards more horror will do. It's just these kids are following a mystery based on this kid who is into conspiracies and stuff like that and is, you know, kind of lives a boring suburban life.
Yeah.
It's very cliche, some of the stuff, but it does play to it very honestly, and it leads up to a pretty great third act that I really enjoy. Like, the movie builds up to... It's all about the ending on this movie, guys. It's all about the last 30 minutes, how it plays out and how the last minute itself plays out, how it correlates with the voiceover introduction from the beginning. It's really good. But I can't spoil it, and I won't. But I will ask you guys to seek it out. It's worth it for that. Along the way, the acting is pretty good. I think the teenagers are pretty teenager-y to me. They're pretty much horny all the time, and that's all they want to do. And they're very crass, and they stick to themselves. They like being in danger a little bit, but not too much. They're just like teenagers, and I think it was great. That's what I liked it.
Yeah, I agree. I like the ending a lot, how it ends, for sure.
Yeah.
Builds up. I thought the main kid played a really good job.
Yeah.
Playing a kid. Like a growing adolescent boy.
Yeah.
Overall, everything else kind of felt cliche-y, but, you know, it's the 80s, and what else do you expect?
Well, also, like, it's funny, why did they choose the 80s to make this movie?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question.
Is it to justify some more of a wholesome thing that they're trying to rip through?
It could be, because I think it's, it could be, I guess, yeah.
Because nowadays, like, a kid would expect divorce to be in your friend's thing, but this one... Divorce is played into it to like shocking.
Not only that, but the serial killer is a new thing also.
That not a new thing, but newish.
Newish. And,
and obviously back then, entertainment men going outside a lot. Yeah.
And it also feels like
doesn't really mean that today.
They do a good job of also portraying a suburban life, and it's like you know, in suburban life we are all quiet, we all know each other, we're all this, we're all that.
We leave our doors unlocked.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And then I don't think.
No, I think ultimately I like the aesthetic.
So do I. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I think they've been doing a good job lately with stuff of that nature in the '80s of playing them pretty well.
You know why?
Why?
Because a lot, the generation of filmmakers that are able to take their own projects forward are now, those newcomers are in their 30s and anyone in the 30s.
There you go.
For 30s or late 40s, you know, they're starting to get their own projects so they can actually minefield their past life in the 80s, living in countries and stuff. So that's why they're able to be depicted better. That's how it is. It's all cyclical. Some 90s stuff too, of course. Anyway, so that's Summer of 84. It's on Shudder.com if you want to see it or pirate it. I don't care. it's offer pirating.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a few here myself in order from this point on. I saw The Meg, which is a action adventure movie, I guess. In a way, horror a little bit, but not too much. After escaping an attack by what he claims was a 70-foot shark, Jonas Taylor must confront his fears to save those trapped in a sunken submersible. And there's a... Oh, my God. These are so long. That was the shortest one. Anyway, this film stars Jason Statham, Rainn Wilson, Bingbing Li, Cliff Curtis is in this movie, Winston Chow, Shuya Sophia Kai, Ruby Rose for some reason, Paige Kennedy, and a bunch of other big players. Oh, yeah. Masioka is in this from Heroes. This is directed by John Turteltaub. Turteltaub? Is that his name? Anyway, he did National Treasure, you know, National Treasure 2 phenomenon. Those kind of movies. That's a shtick. All right, so this movie's fun. It's hella fun. It's more fun than it should be, honestly. And I remember when the movie came out, some of my friends who had seen it or some of the critics who had read about it complained that it wasn't as rough as it should have been. Like the movie wants to be a Piranha or Piranha 3D movie, like adult, but like fun adult horror, you know? And it wasn't. It kind of staved off that so it could have a bigger release for PG audiences. As a money endeavor, they did solid because they made so much money, if I remember correctly. So they did a good job switching everything to PG and not swearing too much, things like that.
That's interesting.
And the movie didn't suffer too much because of it. Like, I don't crave for a harsher version of this movie.
Well, it's funny because we always ask for a harsher version, don't we?
Usually.
I feel like a lot of times we're like, oh, I wish that was rated R.
Yeah, usually. I'm sure in the last two shows we mentioned it at least once. But with this one, I don't think it needs it.
Or a good – you know, it's good that we can appreciate when they – lower a rating, right? Because we appreciate when they raise one, right? And we're like, wow.
With superhero movies, we do that.
We do that a lot, yeah. With like, Deadpool, we were so awesome. The fact that it's rated R, it's like, yes, thank you. But it's funny that we are appreciating something that's toned down.
Well, I am. You haven't seen it yet, have you?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
But I'm saying.
So I think it's fun. It's like a family fun movie overall. I mean, it has some dark stuff, I guess, because there's a giant shark killing people. But it's really cool, and the forget the science. It's all dumb. It gets in there pretty quick, and there's like a weird third act reveal when you think it's over, but it's not at all. There's like 20 minutes left, and like, oh, shit, cool, more stuff. And it has a pretty okay pace to it. Obviously, no one is thinking they're breaking the bank here with this movie. The acting is okay. I wanted maybe a bit more theatrics, maybe. That would have been cool. Theatrics with the shark or maybe theatrics with some of the action involving surviving post-shark attacks. I think a movie should have had more fun with that. Otherwise, a giant submarine in the middle of the ocean checking out the ocean floor. Yes, more of that's fine. It's really cool. I like that Jason Statham still has it. He's always got it. He's a quirky, charming man. Anyway.
That's good.
So that's The Meg. It's out for rent and shit. Right now. Another one here is the movie we were supposed to review this week.
My bad.
Which is, no, it's okay. The Girl in the Spider's Web. The full title is The Girl in the Spider's Web, A New Dragon Tattoo Story, which is a terrible title.
Horrible title.
I know.
Thankfully, you didn't say that, but then you did.
No, because I wanted to make fun of it.
I know.
Young computer hacker Lisbeth Salander and journalist Mikhail Bloomquist find themselves caught in a web of spies, criminals, and corrupt government officials. I switched the N and the N there. I said criminals.
Criminals.
Criminals. This movie stars Claire Foy, The Year of the Foy, Paul Gatson, Sphere Goodnesson, sorry. Lakeith Stanfield is in this movie from Sorry to Bother You. Sylvia Hoax, ma'am, sorry, it's just a Scandinavian name and I don't really know what it says. And a bunch of others. Vicky Creeps is in this movie too, who is that star actress from The Phantom Thread. So I want to mention that for sure.
I didn't see that, but we'll be...
Oh, yeah, but I'm saying. And this is directed by a really good... I really like this director. He did the remake of Evil Dead in 2013, and he did Don't Breathe, which is our first bonus episode, actually. Fede Alvarez.
Fede.
Yes, and I saw it, and I didn't know he had directed it, and so I was watching the movie, and like, oh, Fede Alvarez. I know that name, and I quickly remembered. So this movie is solid. Not great.
Okay.
Not bad at all. It's pretty solid.
What do you compare them to the other three?
So I compare the other four, because there's the David Fincher.
Yeah, I don't care about that one.
And then the three Scandinavian.
No, I care about the three Scandinavian
with
ones.
With Noomi Rapace.
Right, exactly.
Well, I know you care, but I'm saying there's four. And this is mainly based on the American first movie, not... I'm just telling you.
Heavy eye roll. Uh-huh.
Heavy eye... the audience felt it. So real quick is that... how does it feel compared to them? I think it does not compare to the first one because these kind of movies live and breathe in the first one. That's why Back to the Future First will always be the better one for kind of similar reasons. And so, no, it does not compare to the first one very much because that appeal, the enlightenment, the discovery never will be there. But it does, I think it will hold a candle to our second and third.
Oh, that's good.
It does. If not, maybe more on some stuff.
Oh, wow.
Because second and third, definitely the third one, it gets pretty personal and ridiculous a little bit.
It does, yeah.
And this one, not to say that it doesn't get personal or ridiculous. Uh-huh. It just, it's much more toned down.
Do we see her dragon tattoo?
Oh, we see it.
Oh, ooh.
Oh, we see it. Yes, we see a lot.
Is it a different adaptation from the other ones? Or do they keep it pretty
Oh,
much
I think it's a different place. I don't know, man.
No, it should
I
be the
don't
back.
Even wanna, yeah. Don't right. even want to. All
right.
But Claire Foy kills it. For some reason, this is like, if you're like a skinny up-and-coming actress, you should just play the Dragon Tattoo Girl. Because Claire Foy is doing it. Who was the girl who did it first?
I don't know.
Noomi Rapace. And then who's the American one from... well, she's famous now. The point is that they all fucking did it. They all look like they could never do it, and they're like mousy actors usually, and then they come out and they kill it. So I liked it. The only really bad thing I want to say right now, and this should give you the tone of the movie, not to expect too much, but expect pretty goodness in it, is that Lisbeth Salander is basically a superhero. Right? I mean, not really, but she has skills that is unmatched and are pretty awesome to have, right? Skills of cyber hacking. And hacking in general, she's a very smart lady. She's a tactician, and all the other movies, you know this.
Yeah,
you read the book.
She's Shikamaru, yeah.
Yeah, she's pretty cool.
Yeah,
and also dark and twisted and really traumatic and fucked up.
Right.
So the movie does a good job overall. I was like watching for this. I'm like, if it has to get one thing right, is that make sure that she doesn't do anything stupid, because she can't. She can't do anything stupid. If the forces around her force her into something, that's a different story.
That is a different story.
But I don't want a character who's supposed to be a smart, awesome person that gets away with everything, I can't have her be stupid. And she does one dumbass mistake. Not dumbass, just dumb mistake. That I didn't find it believable, but I think it was very plotty and it needed to happen. I just think they could have found a different way. Other than that one moment, the movie doesn't fault on that. So
okay, that's not bad. I mean,
that is my, right. Which is why I don't think the movie.
You can
perfect.
Also kind of forgive it when it's emotional, and you know you get like your emotions get the best of you sometimes. Also, yeah.
But also the bad guy does a similar problem, and she's supposed to be very smart too.
All right, that's shitty.
Yeah.
That's what I hated in Bond movies. It's one of my biggest problems.
Oh, man. Bond movies in general.
Bond movies are just like a perfect example of like, I thought you were smart. Like how you literally did all these amazing things and then you fuck it
you
up.
You have
at
an
the
underwater
end.
Fortress. What
right.
are you doing?
Exactly.
You're moon raking.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's the girl in the spider's web. Not a bad time at the theater. So if you're in for that kind of thing, I say it's good. My last film here, one more here, and this is a really good one. I really like this movie.
That's great. So then our next review.
Right. Uh-huh. It's called Blindspotting. Let me see. What description will I read? Okay, I'll read this one. It's the second smallest one. In this comedy drama... Well, I'm not going to read that. Okay. A black ex-con trying to finish out his year-long probation witnesses a brutal police shooting. An incident that begins to haunt him and ultimately forces him to re-examine his relationship with his white best friend. A man who is known to be reckless and ill-tempered. And this movie stars a bunch of people. David Diggs, which I've seen before. I can't picture right now at this moment. Rafael Casal, Janina Gavangar, Jasmine Jones. I'm not going to read her middle name. Tisha Campbell is in this movie from Martin. Anyway, Ethan Embry, Kevin Carroll, a bunch of people, man. Wayne Knight is in this movie also a little bit. Ziggy Batinger. Anyway, he plays one of the kids. So Carlos Lopez Estrada did this, and this is an Oakland movie. This takes place in Oakland, California, which is, as you may know, where NWA came from and shit like that. You know, big place, popular place. For some reason, this year is the year of the Oakland movies. It's like the third or fourth, at least.
Okay.
The other one being Sorry to Bother You, I think, as well, came from there. Pretty good movie, Ralph. It's so in your face. It's inviting. It's exciting. It keeps up like equal parts tension and comedy, sometimes in the same breath. I don't know how it does it. And for example, there'll be like amazing scenes, which I will not spoil any of it. I do want you to discover it. There'll be like amazing scenes where like it's really funny to make fun of hipsters, and that'll turn that really funny, you know, visual scheme, you know, joke or gag about making fun of hipsters moving into tough neighborhoods to gentrify them, I guess. It'll turn instantly dark the next minute. One minute you'll be laughing your ass off, and it'll instantly completely turn you around in the next second. And it'll do it in such a realistic, completely you can see that happening kind of way. It does it like four times in this movie. And I was like, when I explained to them, but it's rife with cultural turmoil and a lot of the
stuff.
I know it
happens four times. I'm going to have to count them.
Yep. I said like four times. For all I know, it's just twice, and I'm just exaggerating. You don't know shit. But yeah, it's a really good fucking movie. The acting is amazing. The rapping is actually really good, well-written. Pretty great stuff in there. Dude, it's a hell of a movie. It's a hell of a movie. I liked it a lot. Blindspotting, check it out. For Rant, trust me, and just watch it. Blindly watch it. So that's what I've been watching. And that's it for our recent discoveries. We're going to get into our first review of the evening, which is finally going to be Widows. And something tells me that's going to be a long review. Stay with us.
You have no idea, do you? Or did you choose not to know? Your husband stole $2 million from me. This is about my life. This is about my life. And because it's about my life, and that becomes about yours.
Set in contemporary Chicago amid a time of turmoil, four women with nothing in common except a debt left behind by their dead husband's criminal activities take fate into their own hands and conspire to forge a future on their own terms. This is Widows, the much-revered, much-anticipated film by a lot of people, co-written and directed by Steve McQueen, Gillian Flynn, the girl who did Gone Girl.
Yeah.
And that show from this year that I really dug. What's the name of it? It's,
I don't know.
Cutting something, something cutter.
She did a show?
Yeah, she wrote a Sharp Objects.
Oh. Good for them.
An HBO show. I recommended it here on the show.
A Hobo Show?
Hobo Show, yes. Anyway, so that's a pedigree. Pretty great pedigree, in my opinion. Stars Viola Davis, or Viola. Michelle Rodriguez, Elizabeth Debicki, Liam Neeson, John Bernthal, briefly. Manuel Garcia Rufio. Let me see. Very briefly. Robert Duvall. Carrie Coon is in this movie, too.
Okay, I love Robert Duvall in this movie.
I really like him, too. Colin Farrell. Malik Kuntz. I really hope it's not the other way to pronounce that. Mm-hmm. Brian Tyree Henry. I want to mention him for sure. Daniel Kaluuya is in this movie. There's another actress.
Which I find misused.
Jackie Weaver's in this. That's right. Ah, forgot about Jackie Weaver for a minute. Gary Dillahunt is in this movie, and he is not enough in enough movies, in my opinion. And Cynthia Erivo, I want to mention her because she's the fourth girl, and she's so back behind the building here. So I want to mention her for sure. Okay, so this is a November. November tends to be a month where even more than December is the month where a lot of the Oscar nom or the pictures that a lot of studios put their best contenders forth. Usually it's November, and this is one of them. And obviously Steve McQueen, the guy who did 12 Years a Slave, which is probably his biggest movie,
I would say.
And then he did Hunger, which I really dug, and Shame, which I also dug, even though that's way different. You seen Shame yet?
No.
Or Hunger?
No.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, you should watch him. Michael Fassbender, totally, and really in those two movies. All right. So with that in mind, I'm going to start off with you. What did you think of Widows? And were your hopes dashed? Or, like, what kind of hopes did you have, I guess, going into this movie?
Ooh. I actually didn't know what to expect from this movie. Even though I've seen the trailers many times, and I knew they were supposed to do what they were supposed to do. I think it overall exceeded my expectations. I didn't expect anything great. I thought it was going to be more of a... Did I bring it up for Steve McQueen's style? I thought it was going to be more focused on... And it was more focused on the struggle, and we're going to get bogged down in the details.
Mm-hmm.
And don't get me wrong, there is that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There's a lot of that. But the movie still does a good job at progressing, and the movie still does, we don't forget what the main thing's happening, and then you realize you're watching a heist movie, and you're like, oh, and then I get the feels of a heist movie. You know how a heist movie feels?
I know exactly.
And once that kicks in for me, that made the movie really good for me, because I like heist movies.
Totally. Who doesn't, dude? They're really good.
They're really good, and they get you like kind of like edge of your seat, kind of uncomfortable.
Yes.
Because you're like, are they gonna make it? You know, stuff like that. And that's signs of a good heist movie. So that made me uncomfortable in the movie. It got me a little excited. So overall, I did come out liking the movie. I do still think it has misuse of characters, and there's some issues overall, like. I think we see a lot of Viola Davis, which is mainly through her perspective. I would say,
yes,
it's almost exclusively through hers, which isn't a bad thing, but they also don't show enough for me focus on any of her other counterparts in comparison to her for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Which is they're trying to focus on all of them, right? I think the movie tries to tell you we're going to focus on all of them, and we're like, Viola Davis is the main character in this movie, and you're like, oh, okay, and then you kind of forget that there's other people in there until you see them. So okay. Yeah. This is probably one of the disservices. If you want to see it, as a disservice of the movie. It is cool that they focus so much on certain things, and then I also think we had a misuse of. Or maybe we didn't get enough of Daniel Kaluuya.
You liked his performance?
I did like his performance, but I don't know if we got enough of it or if we just misused him in this movie.
There was a chunk where he was missing for sure.
Yeah.
Because we get him strong in the first act, right?
Yeah, we do.
As his intro, and then
almost like
the one thing with the gangsters he does in the basketball.
It's almost like he's our villain, which he is.
Yes.
But we forget about our villain.
He's more like the master villain's like number one
henchman.
Soldier.
Well, number one soldier,
right,
yeah,
or something. Yeah.
Yeah. You're my number one guy.
My number one guy.
Yeah, I do that to Leo every so often.
Really?
Yeah. He's just like, he just goes through motions like, okay. yeah. So anyways, so that's how I feel about the movie. Overall, I still liked it. And mainly because of the heist. And no, hey. I do like the growth of the character as well,
yes.
Of Viola Davis, because so, that's mainly who we're,
yes,
who we're focused on.
I agree. I'm going to say something. I'm going to name two other movies here that are very similar in that they're also heist movies about criminals or about cops or, you know, heroes, whatever. It's about both, right? And mainly about criminals, and made by also acclaimed directors. Like McQueen, right? And one is 999, and the other is Heat.
Okay.
Those are the two I can think of. 999 for sure, the latest one, before this Widows.
Yeah, because you went way back for Heat.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can think of. I'm trying to think. I was wanting to mention George Miller's... what's the name of that big-ass movie?
I don't know.
The desert apocalyptic movie. Oh my God, why am I forgetting the name
what?
Of it? the car chase. Mad Max. I almost mentioned George Miller's Mad Max movie, but that's more of an action thing. And this isn't, it has action, but it's more caper, thriller, right? That kind of thing. So I didn't put it in. So, and I was trying to see, every time a big director or a director who is known for different things, not just genre filmmaking, like Ridley Scott, John Hillcoat, who did 999, and Steve McQueen, when they take on a genre picture like this, they always do it a little different, and they always do it yet very much similar to their other works, because they know that the focus should be mainly characters, development, a pacing of sorts.
Yeah.
And they all, not a lesser director, but a director who's more used to doing genre pictures, right? That's the best way I can say that, would have put another two or three heists in there, or at least flashbacks to other heists maybe that the men did, things like that to get the crowd going. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I didn't say I expected that in there. I didn't like necessarily even want it.
Right.
But I did kind of like missed it.
I agree.
So because it isn't a conventional only... It's a conventional movie, but it isn't a conventional heist movie. It is a conventional heist movie in that, you know, you plan for this one big setup, and it's based on one big turmoil, like the one last job kind of thing. All that is in his movie, in Widows, but you usually get a lot more in between. Or you get like an Ocean's 11 vibe to it. You know, Steven Soderbergh, probably I should put him in there too. Steven Soderbergh is probably the best of this because he knows how to fucking make the audience into every detail. Like, they make them like have fun with learning the details of their plan escapade.
And the reason I get you why you didn't bring Steven Soderbergh in it is because those are like a fun heist movie.
Yes, that's right.
And I get why you didn't
bring Triple Nine is hella serious.
Right, exactly. 100%. Yeah, and then not Ronin, because that's... Even though,
Ronin, that's a good one too.
Yeah, and even though you said what's it called, Heat?
Yeah,
Heat is I would say the closest to this movie between Triple Nine.
The only reason Heat has more action is because it's longer. Heat is like 3 hours long.
No, Heat is 3 hours long.
Like almost three, like 240 something, I think. And it's a long movie, so we can afford a few action scenes here and there. And that's what makes it better. And also the spoilers for Heat, but the last thing they do at the bank, that goes on for 20 minutes. That's a 20-minute action sequence, or 15 minutes, so long.
Yeah.
And it works out in gangbusters. It's different. It's different good. But this one, I really like the premise. The premise is super cool. The trailers didn't do a lot to dissuade me from, like, didn't make me bored.
Like how the this is spoilers for the movie/trailer, is that that's all in the first, like, 10 minutes of the movie.
Oh, thank God, right?
Oh, my God. I was so glad.
Super glad.
I was so glad.
The movie, what did you think of the opening? I really like the opening because it...
Okay, did I miss something in the beginning?
No, what do you mean?
Okay, because I tuned out the previews because I saw one preview. Now that I'm done with these previews. And I just put my headphones on.
Okay.
And I just closed my eyes and I listened to my show. And then I would open my eyes every so often and be like, well, I could still hear the previews every so often because it wasn't that loud. But like once I stopped hearing previews, I was like, oh, let me look up. Right, but it was just kind of like everything was gone. Everything was starting, and I was like, did I miss something? And I don't know if I missed something in the beginning, which might have been like 30 seconds or 10 or nothing.
No, the movie opens up. Did you see Viola Davis and Liam Neeson kissing in bed?
No, I didn't.
That's how the movie opened. That's the first shot.
Okay.
Them kissing in bed, and then it cuts to them stealing the money.
That's literally what I see.
Okay, they do intercuts, and then they show like another family member, one of the other guys' wives.
So I didn't see the Viola Davis part, but I saw the other wives' part.
Right, so you didn't miss.
I didn't miss anything.
Yeah. Besides like 5 seconds.
What I figured. It was 5 seconds.
They put more. See, I think the opening tells you a lot of what you're supposed to expect. Like, even though they do show Michelle Rodriguez's store, right? And her last moments, let's say, with her husband, right? And then Elizabeth Debicki, right? With Shane from Walking Dead. You see all that, right? I think you see two more Viola Davis is only one of theirs. Kind of tells you that we're going to focus on her, and this is like a thesis statement in the opening that this is how it's going to be interspersed. It's going to get a lot of the drama, a lot of the worry, the personal intimacy, which is why we're seeing with the couples alone, you know, before they whatever. And then we see the high stuff too, which means you're going to get the action too. But like, I think the movie opens telling you everything you're supposed to expect without ruining anything.
Okay.
So I liked it for that reason. I don't know if it was meant to be that way, but it felt that way to me. And I really liked the opening a lot. What did you think of that opening? Like the how the heist went wrong, and how did it make you feel? Did it? Because it's supposed to give you a fast impact.
Yeah, right? I felt like I felt like it was sloppy. I felt like they were like, we're like, no, we're going to continue with the plan. You know, that's what
says. Yeah.
And I felt like that feels sloppy.
Yeah. It did.
It felt really sloppy in comparison to like, and I felt like, why are they just listening to him? Right. And then you get the answer why, and everything happens later. Mm-hmm. What's it called? Specifically why they listen to him is because he's kind of a mastermind.
Yeah.
But it did feel sloppy. Yeah. So that's how I felt it felt rushed and it felt sloppy. What was logical? I've seen many heist movies. So.
Yes, right. It ain't no Rafifi. And so did you, I guess, were you convinced of the impact of it? Like, did you convince yourself or were you convinced that not enough time was spent, because obviously it wasn't. It was the first 5 minutes. But enough impact was put in you to give a shit about these widows and their husbands who made this the mistake of their lives. Like, did you feel that? So that way, when Daniel Kaluuya and the guy who's running for alderman, when they come in, the gangsters who got robbed and asked for their money back, did the impact was the impact there for you? The conflict, did it feel strong enough for you? I guess, because all that happens in the first 15 minutes.
Yeah. So I do. It worked out, but it worked out because of Viola Davis's performance.
I'm gonna say that too. Yes.
And I hate to say it but that's how it worked out, because everything else you get, you're just getting it, and I'm like, I don't need to care for anybody because I just see these people die. But why am I caring for them?
Yeah, I think the movie. I know they did that whole little thing
about, you know, like, hey, I love this person, we're saying bye to them. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's a pretty cool touch. I like the touch. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't knock it. You're making us know that there's a relationship there. They were human. You know, they all have their thing. One's kissing his wife goodbye with his brand newborn son. The other one's, you know, opening a store and, hey, make sure you pay the rent and all this stuff. You know, like, life is going for them.
Yes.
And they're like, yeah, like, let me go do my job, you know, like, rob a bank or whatever.
Yeah, it's funny. Every time there's a heist movie of this caliber, the leader's always some weirdo. Like, Robert De Niro, he's very adamant about his code. He can't have a girl. He can't be with someone that he can't detach himself if the heat is around the corner. Right? That's the whole purpose of that thing. And Liam Neeson, weirdo, writes everything in a notebook. And, like, you find out, like, he's super meticulous. You can see where he lives. Him and Viola Davis live in a very clean, sterile environment. The guy is a perfectionist to a point where he's probably a little psycho about it. You can tell, even though he's dead, the whole movie, like, you can tell.
Yeah, well, you know? What I think they do a good job about is Liam Neeson's character in the movie. And I bring it up because it's brought up throughout the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he's somebody who was known, but you don't know what he's known for.
Yes.
Like, you know that he is known in the Underworld series. Not that serious.
No, not the vampire series. No.
Exactly. You know he's known in the underworld, right?
Yeah.
Underground part of the culture, right? So all the robbing and all that stuff. People know him for that reason, right? Because we have our villains who know him for that. And we also know he's hated by cops,
mm-hmm.
right? And this is all like this first 15
minutes. But loved by politicians.
So what the fuck was he?
Yeah.
We don't know. No one says anything.
Yeah.
And we all dance around this thing where all you need to know is that he was known, he was powerful, and he had a lot of connections, and he was rich.
And he never made mistakes. Two different people said that about him.
What?
Like, he never made mistakes.
He never made mistakes, exactly.
And obviously, it makes you rethink that opening where you see the mistake, the heist going completely wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
The cops are waiting for him, and the SWAT team shoots it, and then they hit a gas tank, and it blows up the car. That's all in the opening.
Yeah.
And, like, fuck. You know, and you hear the guy screaming in the back of the van while it's happening.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, we're not going to get to that point until later. So I guess my point is, or maybe I lost my point, but I was going to say, what did you think of? Do you think that everything we got of Liam Neeson through Viola Davis was her version of him, or did you believe that Liam Neeson's character was exactly like that? Because we get her, like, flashbacking to him, right? We get her, like, that thing with the drink in the shower. I don't know what that's about. I really don't know.
The shot glass?
Yeah. What was that?
It was
that a pregnancy thing?
It was a flask. No.
Okay.
It was a flask with a shot glass built in it.
Yeah.
And he pours herself on.
Yeah.
Right? And then it's like, it was like a gift that she bought for him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it was basically like, I guess, it was almost like their good luck thing. Like, here, this is for you making me.
I guess.
Or like having one last toast just in case. with you. It almost felt like that, right?
Because it felt like they did it in the shower only. I'm like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
It just felt weird. I agree.
It didn't feel weird at all. Yeah. It felt weird. But it was like the last thing they did together. That's what it was.
Right.
What's it called? So that's an interesting question that you put, though, about am I thinking that's what Viola Davis's point of view about her husband, mm-hmm. or is that what – I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's the thing that she wanted for her husband, is who her husband was.
Mm-hmm.
Now this was the version that everyone knew of, right? Because everyone speaks about it.
Yeah.
Right? About the husband, but it was also the version that she wanted best for him. So it's like she accepted that version of him once he passed. Mm-hmm. And she was only remembering the happy times. And all those moments that she sees obviously for herself that are what truly was for her, right? Because you see all the happy times that there are all this stuff, and you do see some arguments in her flashbacks, because there's flashbacks throughout the movie.
Yes,
I don't want to ruin anything, of course.
But. No. I was gonna say that. Give me an idea.
So, you get that, but you're getting I think she's accepting the image of what everyone else speaks about her husband. At least that's what we get. That's what we get in the beginning of the movie, or the first half of the movie.
So I think that there is another thing the movie does very cleverly. I didn't notice until towards the end of the movie. The movie goes from her thinking of her husband as a loved one to, it's like almost like someone weighing the positives and the negatives of a person. But in that order, like she is seeing him at his most positive in the opening with his dad. Actually, the very first shot, technically, right? Because you're kissing so amorously.
Yeah.
And the 5 seconds you miss, Ralph. And then leaning into other moments of intimacy in bed. You know, I think there's a laughing part in it. There's the thing in the bathroom with the shot glass. You see all this stuff. And it progressively gets more muted. And it gets like a little awkward, and then they mention something about their kid or potentially of a son or something about a child, and then it gets into cons. You start getting into like things that weren't so great in this marriage.
Yeah, well, she's going through the stages of
is it stages of grief? Well, is it
feels like she is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it stages of grief, or is it as the movie is progressing and she's going through, what is it? She gets 2 weeks to pay the thug back?
It's a month.
It's a month, sorry.
But we get down to 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then we get down to a week.
Right, right. And it's funny how the movie chooses to rely on her information or her perception of her husband as a point of the story than it is about the details about everything. Like, I'm not saying there isn't details. Like, there's this thing about a panic room safe that Michelle Rodriguez is charged with getting, and then there's Elizabeth Debicki's character who is doing was seeking arrangements or whatever. They go with rich people, right, and they give them gifts and stuff. And she has to like get guns, for example, and she finds her own little ways, and she has her own little supply. They do have details, but they don't really spend a lot of time on what they're gonna do. Where is the floor plan? They kind of save out some of that information just for a reveal at the end.
Yeah.
And instead chooses to go with Viola Davis's perception of her husband, and moreover her perception of if she can do this, pull this off. So did you find that like a worthy choice? Is it a good reason for the movie to do that?
Well, I felt like doing that was her getting over the hump that her husband is gone. Right?
Yeah.
And pushing herself, using it as a force to push herself to motivate to do it. And I think because the movie brings it up once, everybody knew what their husbands did.
Yes and no.
Right.
Yes.
Yes and no.
It's amazing how much they didn't know.
It is amazing how much they didn't know, but it's amazing how much we know they knew.
It's also the anti-Heat, because in Heat, all the crew knew each other and their wives. They all knew each other. Exactly. Everyone knew what they were doing.
So in this one, I think the person who knew the most out of everything that happened was Viola Davis.
Mm-hmm.
I think she was more connected than we think about in comparison to the other wives, right? So that makes a big difference if you think about it. So I think her knowing her husband so well and knowing how meticulous he was, and I think just I think had we seen a little bit more of her understanding that book, even though we get a scene or two of her reading the book and like just kind of like trying to get like understand it.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we got something a little bit more, we would have. I would have extrapolated that she's using that time to use her late husband's death to motivate her. Mm-hmm. That if my husband could have done this, and I understand my husband, and I understand what his writings does and everything, I can do this. There's no reason why I can't do this,
mm-hmm.
and I'm strong enough to do this as well. I know I know the details. I have everything in front of me. I'm smart enough to understand how to execute this.
Yeah.
But we never get those moments in the movie shown to us.
No.
We're supposed to lead to believe that that's what's happening, or at least that's what I was led to believe.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious. I'm not 100% sure that she did know, honestly. I think she knew probably in a way the least. I think she was able to accept it the most. Because of what she worked with. She worked for the teachers union, right, she mentioned. And then, but she never questioned something that could have been shady. But I think she thought of it more, maybe more of a shady developer or businessman or shady criminal, oh, not criminal, but a politician or something like that,
yeah.
Because of his friends. Not necessarily criminals. But Michelle Rodriguez and Elizabeth Debicki's characters, they knew their husbands to be criminals. They just didn't know what kind of criminals. They didn't know how deep it was. They didn't know what they were doing. They just knew that, come on. That one had a gambling problem, the other beat her and shit. Like, it was just, you know, kind of atypical, right?
Yeah.
More typical, I mean, of criminals, class of criminals. And Liam Neeson was just a higher white-collar criminal, you know what I'm saying? So, but yeah, I think her resolve to understand it and go with it is definitely what made it look like she was more accepting of it. I think we should get into spoilers. But before we get into it, I just want to say, what did you think of the performances overall? I know that Viola Davis, I mean, kills it, in my opinion. And but what did you think of other people? We haven't mentioned Colin Farrell's or Robert Duvall's or any other side characters that are kind of in a few scenes and here and there. What did you think of the character work here? Or acting work, sorry.
Acting work. I already mentioned Daniel Kaluuya.
Yes.
I thought it was misused or just underused.
Did you like his opening with a basketball court thing? Well, that wasn't his opening.
That, wasn't his,
that
opening.
Was his first big one.
That was his first big one.
Where he demanded the scene, I mean.
Yeah, where he demanded the scene.
Right. Commanded.
Commanded, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a good piece of who he is and who he wants to always be. Because we get that little thing in the beginning, before that, when what's that guy, the other politician, comes in and they talk to each other
from
at the
Atlanta.
Church.
Yeah, I know.
When they talk to each other at the church,
mm-hmm.
and he's like, "Why are you even trying to be part of this? Like, we're this. Why are you trying to be in politicians?"
Right.
And then the brother, they're brothers, right?
Yeah, they're brothers.
He tells them, he's like, "Well, I want money. I want money. I want legal money. I want money so people know." Hey,
it's like The Wire.
It's like The Wire.
Basically. Exactly like The Wire.
It is The Wire. He wants to be legitimate, even though he's got money. He wants to be legitimate. He doesn't.
But he also
get his...
wants a higher class of money. He wants to own the buildings that they sell drugs out.
Exactly.
Of. They don't want to just.
Yeah,
sell
yeah.
Drugs
no,
out.
I get it. I get right. it. I get what he's trying to do. And the brother's just like, we're doing well enough.
Right.
And that's
like, why rock the boat?
So that next scene, the next scene is showing off that, yeah. So he's taking care of business, and he's like, this is what I like to do.
Yeah.
And so it shows off. It does show off an important thing, right? Of what he likes to do and who he is as a person. So I like the scene overall, but we don't get as much.
Yeah, we don't get as much. We get a little tidbits here that I think are interesting, but they never play it off because I think they're just showing color.
Yeah.
Right? And one of them is like he's learning a different language. I think it was Portuguese. I'm not 100% though.
It might have been,
That book he was reading before he killed those two guys. I think it was, I thought at first it was like some literature book. I don't know what it was. So God forbid, something stupid like, I don't know, some sort of art of war crap. But he wasn't. I guess he was reading a book on a language or learning words on a language or something, like, you know, a language. And I think it was Portuguese. He was practicing in the car once, right? Or somewhere by himself.
Yeah.
And I really like that the basketball scene. The shot was so tense because it
very
kept circling
tense,
him, and it was all in one take, I think, and at least that particular part. And it was a very cool opening for him. I sucked him in to get more. So I agree of him. But what did you think of the political stuff in this movie?
Colin Farrell, right?
Yeah.
I thought Colin Farrell knocked it out of the park, to be honest with you, as a politician.
Trying to get out of the thumb.
But you know what?
Being new age about it.
Do you want to know why I really like Colin Farrell? I liked how real he felt.
Yeah.
He felt like I'm third generation politician. He's like, I don't want to fucking be like you guys. And he's like, I don't want to.
Yeah.
He's like, you fucking fucked everything over and you keep thinking your old way. And he fucking fought tooth and nail. Now, he moaned like a little bitch about it, right? To his wife. I think it was his wife, right?
His wife and his father. And we get it a little bit to Viola Davis.
Great scene also when they leave the lot. And it's all in one shot, and you don't see anybody. Mm-hmm. You just see the car driving.
Oh, dude, that was perfect. Perfect.
Scene.
That was one of my favorite shots.
It was one of my favorite shots.
Tells you how bad
too.
The neighborhood came in from, and how close his house is.
Not only that, but right as he's talking about how, like, have you ever been with a black guy? Do you know how big dicks are and stuff like that?
Right.
And then you see like the camera pan from the passenger to the driver, and the driver's obviously black. And and he's like just having this open conversation, no problem.
Right.
Right. And then of course he still leaves. He's like, oh, thank you so much for the ride. I appreciate it. Like, and I was like, where do you live? Like, where in your headspace do you live that you're fine with this?
And also, that's the only time, and we never see this, you know, because his secretary, I guess he's sleeping with her or they're married. I don't know what they were.
We don't get a definite answer on that,
I think there is a little answer in that they're definitely together.
Yeah, they're definitely together.
I don't know how much, right. That's the only time we see her being forceful is in the car, but we don't see her being forceful because it's just her dialogue.
Exactly.
I think it's very interesting because she looks so mousy and backgroundy and like subservient a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think it's all an act based on that car ride.
Based on that car ride. Exactly.
Right. I just thought it was a great shot.
Yeah. It is a great shot. And but that's a very powerful. I just felt like Colin Farrell is very open and very, very political as well. And he's obviously just trying to take care of his end, and he doesn't care about anybody else.
Right.
And I liked it. So Colin Farrell, I think, does a great job in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
For all the screen time he gets and everything. I think we get more screen time with him than we do with Daniel Kaluuya.
Yeah, so. Probably. Yeah. Because it has a more plot-driven.
I do.
More
plot-y to it. I agree. Yeah. That makes sense. And then the father being Duvall. Senile Duvall is amazing. That's all I got to say.
Dude, I'm telling you.
Senile Duvall is the newest thing.
The thing is that they've been using him. He's been Senile Duvall. The age of Senile Duvall has been since late 90s. Easy. Yeah. That guy's old as fuck.
He really is.
He plays really good.
He plays it so well.
He can play the old white man races so well.
So well.
He's so good at it.
Right. And it's funny because it's almost comical. But it's comical because it's like, you're just an old man. You're just fucking a dying old man.
Yeah.
And we're like, of course, we're going to let you say all this racist shit, right?
Yeah. Everyone just walks over. Like, no one even acknowledges it.
Right.
Yeah,
but he felt very Daly-ish also.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God,
if you know anything about Chicago.
Yes.
And, man.
He did.
So other than that, I mean, I thought he did a great job. That family all along did a great job.
Okay.
So I was very, very happy with that.
Awesome.
I thought they nailed that like fucking perfect.
Cool.
And I just love how they nail kind of the political climate, the shadiness, the fucking scum of the earth that politicians are, specifically in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's got to get their fucking cut no matter where.
Yeah, everywhere. Everyone.
And it's
like
annoying.
If you don't get your cut,
you're an idiot.
You will get cut for it.
You will get cut.
It's like if you're a good person, you will be penalized for being a good person.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Good people don't last in office.
No.
And they're like, if you're not getting your cut,
so crazy.
Then someone else is going to take it from you.
Yes.
And that's the gist of it.
Dude, Chicago is fucked up.
It's so fucked up.
We live here. It's fucked up. It's so fucked up. Anyway, we're going to get spoilers right now because it's been a while. Spoilers for Widows starting right now.
Harry Rollins. Never mess with me. I never mess with him. We in different games. I always have respect. So why'd he hit me now?
I wonder why. Thinks you're setting your sights on something high, you're getting sloppy.
Mrs. Rawlings, I'm Jack Mulligan. I had the privilege of working with your husband a couple of times. He was a wonderful man. I'm so sorry for your loss. If there's anything I can do, please don't hesitate to ask. I'm not a hard man to find. And God bless.
So what did you think of the movie's interpretation of Chicago? Now that we just mentioned Chicago, so fucked up.
I loved it.
You loved it, right? I liked
really
it, too.
Now, I'm going to say something straight.
Chicago is gigantic. It's a gigantic city. I'm going to tell you right now. And people don't realize how gigantic the city is.
Our south is three times bigger than our north.
Three times bigger. And yes. I don't even know half the south. The south side. I don't either. I'd be lucky to say I know a quarter of it. And to be honest with you, and that's saying a lot.
Yeah.
Now, I know a lot of the public transportation route, so I know a lot of this movie, how it takes place and where it takes place, because it's the Green Line.
Yep.
And it works out great. So that worked out for me that I know that.
Yes.
Right? So that works out. And I know, obviously, downtown and all that other jazz. So that works out. All that stuff is fun that I gets along. I did get, and I thought that every time they bring up something wise, it did feel like, yeah, you're right, you're describing Chicago 100%. It's like when Colin Farrell brings up, like what's it called? You know, it's the same car ride. He's arguing about how like all the black people are killing each other and all the this and that. Yep. And like, why do I have to even like bend for them? And he's like super fucking just going crazy off the walls, being racist and elitist at the same time.
And also frustrated.
Yes, yeah. Also frustrated because he can't even help them. He's like,
even if he wanted to 100%, like exactly. He wouldn't know
he's
how.
Like, right. He wouldn't exactly. Yeah. So, and it's funny because like, he's like, I don't even want to do what I'm doing. Right? And that's like, that's what's the
but
funny.
But it's so expected of him.
I don't even want to do it. I am forced to do it. And he's mad because he's forced to do it.
Yeah.
And just because he's like, I'd rather do something else, but I fucking have to deal with this shitty hand I have. Mm-hmm. And this is the life I'm dealing with right now.
Yeah. It's almost like no one can be happy. Even the rich people who brought up rich, like Colin Farrell's character, will never be happy because of the circumstances put upon them from all the bloodshed and poor fucking people that had to take for his family to get here. Right. It's so backwards. And I'm not saying I feel sorry for him at all. I'm just saying that that's his side.
Yeah. So that on top of the – what's it called? I love the – oh, what's her name? Our driver in the movie.
Oh, the babysitter?
Yeah.
Cerevo is her last name, her real last name.
Okay. So her –
you like her entrance into it?
I like her story about how it falls for Chicago.
Yes.
And that's how those neighborhoods are.
Yes.
And it's shitty that she lives in those neighborhoods and she works those hours and she gets harassed and she doesn't want to deal with it. And the fact that she has to run to make the bus just to not get harassed by people.
Right.
Just
she sees her daughter for 2 minutes and then she gets another gig. Like, oh my God, I got to make this gig.
I have to work.
And then she leaves right away.
And it's that hustle. But that's an honest hustle.
At first I was confused why they were showing her so much of her. I'm like, oh, what is she? And could she be the Dennis Haysbert of Heat? You know how they show Dennis Haysbert in that movie like a few times? You know, him getting out of jail, him getting that shitty job, going to a halfway house. I'm like, why are we showing it? Oh, because he's the driver at the end of the movie. Yeah. Out of the blue, he gets in to help. She's kind of the same, but in a much more in a much more honest way. Of course, this is better. But I really liked her in the movie. Yeah.
I like the way she depicts in that, like how it is to be if a single black woman, single black mother. Who has to just try to help out, just try to get all these jobs to fucking feed for her kids, right? Or her kid. She doesn't even have multiple. She's got one.
Mm-hmm.
And what she has to deal with on a daily basis because of who she is. And she's a good-looking woman also on top of it. It's like even in her own neighborhood, she has to still fucking – and she doesn't want to deal with it. She's like, I have to struggle everywhere I go, and I don't have to deal with it. So she'd rather just run past it.
Yes.
You know?
She's constantly on the move.
I did like that, and that's another thing about Chicago. So that adds on to.
Yeah, she is kind of like a totem or some sort of like a – she represents a certain group, right, of people who are trying to get above water, right?
Yeah, right.
And particularly to Chicago.
Right.
Yes.
So what's funny also in the worst state of the Chicago side, Viola Davis plays the part of – I am ignorant to the rest of the world in Chicago, and I have my penthouse apartment by the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't need to worry about your – like, I don't care about your squabbles.
Yeah.
Like, I care about me. And I have – and they live this luxurious life of I have a driver. I have a gated –
got a white driver.
White driver as well. I have this key – what's it called? You know, the door – everybody has to go through a doorman in this place. Like, no one can just come into the house or anything like that.
Yes.
It's all this, like, super, like, exclusiveness of Chicago that Chicago offers also that you don't see. It's like this It's like there, it's visible, but it's invisible. The inside is invisible to what you see on the outside.
It's like they
have
their own private elevator to get to Chicago.
It is.
It's like they don't have to go through the public.
And it is weird, right? Yeah. And it's like, yeah, like, oh, okay. And they're like, we don't – and they make it obvious to her. And the same thing goes with Michelle Rodriguez's one. She plays the Latin version, the Latin thing.
Yes, exactly.
Where she's got a – if I felt like I was on 26th Street, where she's
– oh, my God.
Where she's got a fucking quinceañera store. Quinceañera store. Is that even a quinceañera store?
Well, it's not.
It's a little bit of everything, right?
Yeah, but party favors and
shit. Yeah, yeah. But it's mainly for quinceañeras. You saw the dresses and everything. Yes. That's where, obviously, they make the most money. I've been to those stores before.
I mean,
God damn, I've been to those stores before.
Yeah.
And it felt just like one, you know? And it felt like, I get why you're here. You know, we all know. We all understand. And her kids are playing everywhere in the background. And they didn't get too much into her because it wasn't about her. So,
but also, it's funny because, you know, for us, maybe because we've been to those stores or we've seen, like, the babysitter. Her character name was Belle, by the way. And maybe not so much the Bickies, the other white one. The only white one, actually. And of the group. We had to do was just look at one scene and we understand everything.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it was.
Maybe that's what it was, yeah.
And we had to spend more on Viola Davis to explain where...
But most people aren't in Viola Davis's life.
Right, exactly.
Right, so that's another thing. Right. And I think most people are in the life of the one who has the child.
Right. Who's living in that apartment. That mother is there to babysit it while you babysit other kids.
Right. Not only that, but it's also not only hers, but it's also the other child, the newborn, the one that she never wants to take a part of anything.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That we're about to get into.
Yes. Yeah, we are going to get into that.
Her, because she lives like in a almost like a bungalow style house, which, you know, and she just has, you know, they have her home in this community. Nothing crazy. It's just your standard Chicago community.
It is.
She just lives there, and that's it. They just lead a normal life. There's nothing crazy, and that's how most people live.
Yeah.
But they don't even need to go into it, besides the fact that she wasn't even partaking in the actions of the movie.
All right, so you want to get to the one of the reveals?
Which one do you want to get to?
Liam Neeson is alive.
That's fucked up.
Okay.
How did you feel about the reveal?
So my first thought was when the dog was yipping at the fucking door, I did not think that he was alive behind there. I thought that something of his was there and that the dog was just sensing it and that we find out that he was sleeping with Carrie Coon and Carrie Coon's new kid is Liam Neeson.
So that was a good red herring that they did in the beginning. And earlier when they first go to the garage where they do all the planning because she has a coat.
And the coat, yeah,
and exactly. A coat, and the dog does the same thing, like starts sniffing it up like, oh, this is my master's coat or whatever.
Yes,
and this my master's smell. So they did a good red herring of like, oh, it's probably another thing.
Yes.
Right?
They did. And I fell for it. Completely.
Exactly. I fell for it too.
And then she saw the shot glass thing. Was like, oh, is that like the shot glass? Was almost a curveball for me because I thought like you, it was kind of a gift,
yeah,
or at least something weird, a gift or something. But to take that as his only thing he took upon his fake death, or he kept with him, you know, is this shot, this flask.
It's almost like I have this as a remembrance of my past life,
right?
Yeah,
like he fucked up there. So much for perfect.
He did fuck up. So much for perfect, indeed.
Yes.
Well. He never took into account her.
He never took into account her resolve. Yeah,
her
wanting, like, it's because he thought, okay, so his plan was always to have her sell the book of plans, the heist plans, to the gangsters for $2 million, for what she owed, right?
Yeah.
So that way it's back to square one, ideally, and then no one will hassle her anymore, and she lives the rest of her life without a husband, but without having to worry about these gangsters, right?
Yeah.
But she was like, no. I'm going to do this heist, get paid them what I owe them, and keep the rest of the money.
I think she knew that she wouldn't be able to sell that book for that money.
Well, okay, do you think she wouldn't be able to?
Yeah, I don't think she would be able to. Hmm. I think it would have been like – I think she knew had I give this book to them, I give this to them, and it's just going to be like, you still owe us money.
Probably, yeah. That's just how criminals at work. Yeah, unfortunately, that's how it is a lot.
And she knew better. I think she knew better.
Well, it's almost like there's a one scene when they first talk about the book. When they first discover the book, Daniel Kaluuya and the Alderman guy, they first talk about it. And he's like, "What book? What is this book?" And he's like, "Yeah, I think she's kind of hoping to sell it to you or something." When he talks to that bowling guy or something, it's some combination of dialogue there. And he like almost considers it that, yeah, I guess I can sell it off. Like I guess that would be enough. He almost doesn't say it like that, but he says it in a way where like he could consider accepting this heist book as payment. Not that he ever said it, not that he would have done it had he been presented with it. I'm just saying, it felt like that. They even mentioned it a little bit, which I think is part of this red herring process, or this curveball thing where it makes you think that it could go one way, but it never does. Anyway, that's just what I think there. But Liam Neeson, alive, douchebag. Why do you do it?
Oh, shit.
Now, did it do a 180 on this character for you?
It kind of did. Because
it did too, for me.
But at the same time, I can't say, is it the movie's fault? Is it the movie's fault? Or is it our fault for saying that we know who Liam Neeson's character is through flashbacks?
Well, it's the thing is that, as I was saying before, like, Viola Davis was remembering him very fondly.
Right.
Very one, you know, just through her perspective.
Until the reveal. Yeah.
And it was just through her perspective, so.
I think until we get the actual scene of what happened to their son.
Yes.
Which is fucking crazy.
That's so bad.
Also, he, wait.
I've been in that street, by the way. I recognize that street so much. Like, I've been, yeah, anyway. Yeah.
What's it called? Also, just bad reaction on his part also.
Yeah, don't go in the club. I mean, I guess that might be part of his privilege, because if he had to be living in a different neighborhood, he would know better than to fucking do that.
Yeah, well,
go
I
in
just...
in the glove compartment like
well,
that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I just think he's... That's how...
I wouldn't do that.
That's how not even thought... Like, he's not even in the thought process.
No, he's not.
For him, he's like, oh, what are you guys talking about?
He's just thinking of a ticket that he has to get out of.
Exactly, yeah. Right.
No, I get it.
So, yeah. That being said, I think once we get that reaction, you can see why there's a distance between them.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense. And now you kind of see the whole, like that scene, because they show it again. They show the scene like four times or three times where they're getting the shot in the shower.
Yes.
And you see it again, and that's obviously the last day they see each other. But you see it a little differently. You see it as in like she's almost toasting to – I almost see that as a, like, I'm toasting to maybe you won't come back this time.
Hmm.
And this is the last time I see you.
Okay.
And I see it like that. And he's like, okay. And that there's obviously a huge gap in between them. And that's how I almost see it. That's how I almost interpreted that scene.
That's great.
So that being said, is like, I'm putting my thoughts, obviously the movie gave me those, right, of what I should think about Liam Neeson, yeah. But I don't get mad at the fact that he did this one crazy 180. What really pushed me over was the very end.
Oh, yes. When he goes back to the garage or whatever?
Yeah, when he goes back to the garage. That was a little bit too much, too extreme for me.
Yeah.
That I didn't ever see coming, right?
I still don't know what to think about it because
I don't know what to think about it either.
So
but everything else
wrong.
Between that he was why he betrayed her, why he did everything, I agree with that. I understood everything else after that.
Yes. I agree. I understood that too. I'm glad you read all that into that reinterpretation of that shot glass scene in the shower.
Well, why else show it to us?
Right. No, you're right. You're right. I had a little bit of a different theory, but yours makes way more sense. I'm not even going to mention mine. But I like that.
Aww.
No, it's good.
I got to stop saying things first. This isn't bullshit.
I say a lot of things first.
This is like two movies in a row where
I say a lot of things
first. I say my interpretation of you're like, that's a. I'm going to take your interpretation of the motherfucker. Like.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why we have a discussion, bitch. No, I liked it. And so when it comes to that scene, what do you think is going on in that scene? It is an extreme version. It made me hate the character in a way that I didn't want him to hate. Like, I didn't want to hate him that way. I didn't want her to have to kill her husband. You know, I didn't.
I almost.
So, yeah.
The very end that we're talking about, right?
Yes, when he tries to steal the rest of the money, right? Were the gangsters paid off? No, right?
No.
No. Because Gadam Killer gets killed.
Gangsters weren't paid off yet.
Paid off yet?
Yeah.
Did they get paid off?
That's a good question.
Probably yes?
Probably.
I don't know. Okay, continue. Yeah. Well, I'll continue, actually, since you gave your thoughts. I'll give my thoughts on this one first. So, what was I saying? So, $5 million, right? They split off the three, right, into the four people. So that split story done. So ideally, Liam Neeson comes back in. He already has $2 million. Actually, $1 million because he paid off Colin Farrell. He comes in to steal the rest of the money. And it felt like such a blatant power grab, like a blatant greed. Like, it felt equal parts like a criminal, like never having enough. Kind of thing. He saw an opportunity to take more money, even though he already got away scot-free,
yeah.
Pretending to be dead.
Yeah.
he still had to take his chance and get more money. It felt that way on one hand, which made me enraged as an audience member. And then on the other hand, I was thinking, well, is this his way to secure the fact that, how do I put this? I thought that he was punishing her for their lives or their marriage or how it turned out or something that isn't her fault. Or maybe if it is her fault, definitely doesn't deserve this anyway. And I think that he couldn't live with the fact that she got not only away from the gangsters, ideally, but she got that much more than him. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, could that be it? Are we supposed to read that into it? I thought it was after the movie.
Yeah.
Because in that moment, I was so enraged, and I wasn't thinking straight on it. And I was thinking, like, can he just not let her fucking win? And I was thinking, do I even want her to win? I mean, she is very brusque. Doesn't give anybody a shit about herself, or only to herself or whatever, which I understand, though, but it's not a bad person. It's just... I did want her to win. I just didn't know if she deserved it. I don't know.
Yeah. So I just thought of one scenario that could be.
Yeah.
But the one I'm following that I felt, the first thing that came to me was a very similar one to you. The one that you just explained was that to punish her, right?
Yeah.
But it was more like envious of her that she pulled off one of his works. And if not his biggest score, would have been his biggest score.
Yes.
And she pulled it off and without his help, without him being part of it, even though it was all his plans and everything.
Yes.
But the fact that she could pull it off, right, and still come out with all the money, and he's like, that's my money. I worked for that.
Yeah.
You did it with my job, so this is my money.
Yeah.
And that's the criminal way of looking at it. And that's the first thought that came through my head. And I was like, petty.
Petty,
like,
jealous, yeah.
Petty definitely. Motherfucker. And I was like, wow. You do have flaws, like complete flaws, right? Yeah. Like you're just a fucking complete asshole. So that's the first thing I thought. The other thing I thought was, and I know it's not it, but I just thought about it, and it could be like, I'm going to force her hand here, and I'm going to force her hand, and I'm going to be like, because he hits her. And yes. Came out of the blue.
Yes.
And I was like, whoa, like why, like, what does she deserve to get hit?
Yeah.
Right. Maybe I get pushed, get the fuck out of my way, but complete hit. Like.
You reminded me of something.
Uh-huh. What's it called? I almost see it like he obviously just never cared for her, right?
Mm-hmm. On one hand,
right? And he did that to almost like, I'm gonna take this money, and the only way that you're getting out of this is if you kill me.
Now, do you think that
he forces her hand? And it's almost knowingly.
Do you think that you think his thought process was that she doesn't have the balls to kill me?
Yes. I think that is the process. And I was like, how would you – had I seen my wife and I did all this to her and I'm this is the thing and I'm in this relationship, I'm in Liam Neeson's shoes, I would be like, wow. I would not think that she's not going to kill me. She loves me too much to kill me. No fucking way would I think that. Why? Because she just fucking pulled something off that I thought that she'd never be able to pull off. So that everything's out of the water for me now. I don't know what she can do anymore. I don't know how what her resolve.
Well, that's what I'm saying is that because
underestimate her?
Well, that's the thing is that I don't think he did. What if he committed suicide by Viola Davis?
That's what I was trying to say. That's what I was bringing up.
Yeah.
Is it that he forced her hand to be like, you're gonna have to kill me? So I'm forcing your hand in this scenario, right?
Yeah.
So you get what's best for you, and I get and you know whatever, and this is my reward to you or whatever.
Yeah.
In some weird fucking twisted way, but it's a dumb thought. Mm-hmm. And it's just a thought, to be honest with you.
No, I don't think it's so dumb because we do get two crucial things in there. One is the surprising element of his violence to her at that end that clearly is meant to provoke her, much like if you do want to commit suicide by, let's say, a cop, you do the same thing.
So do you think he was just done with it?
Yes. Okay. One, and then the scene previous to that is when she leaves Carrie Coon's house crying upon the dog yelping at the door, is that his longing look at her as she leaves on the window kind of has his ruminations. Like he's thinking about, like, I think shame is coming in stronger than he probably felt, or guilt or something. Those are the two evidences I have.
Should be.
Which isn't a lot. I'm not saying I could still be wrong. Like, I think if the movie wanted to make it explicit, he would have had, like, his gun chamber would have been empty to let her kill her. Something like that. I don't know what they would have done.
Yeah.
I'm saying they could have made it more explicit.
I agree.
but it wasn't. I'm still kind of leaning towards maybe he was just ultimately a greedy criminal that kind of washed his hands off his ex-wife.
That he was just done with it.
Starting a new family.
It could be that he was just done with it, and he's like, you know what?
No.
I'm fucking done. Like, I can't. I'm a complete fuck up, and mm-hmm. I'm gonna suicide. Like, almost like, you know, suicide by cop.
Yeah.
Which is not a real thing. Which is a real thing, should I say?
Yeah.
Almost like that, mm-hmm. and it gives her an out.
Yeah.
He comes back to life. He's actually alive, mm-hmm. and you're like, holy fuck. And there's, she plants the evidence on him. She knows what to do, and they get away scot free. Yes. I mean, that's fucking perfect.
Yeah,
like that's literally perfect thing for them.
Yes,
because you're like, how do you get away with it now? Because now you have a gun unaccounted for. You can get it traced back to you.
And not to mention the one other that who's girl the got patsy? Shot.
Someone got shot. Is that coming back to somebody? Right. But getting this literally fucking clears everything.
But I like how you when she goes, Michelle Rodriguez takes her into the hospital, and like she got shot drive by. No, fine, no questions
no
asked.
No fucking
because everyone's asked. Like, yep, totally
also,
see that coming.
Also, love it. It was a Hispanic woman and a fucking white woman. So you're like, yeah, white woman shot? Of course. Yes, drive by. They were just partying out or something.
Right. Yeah. Probably aiming for you, weren't they?
Right.
Something.
And I love that scene with Viola Davis because she's doing all the work at the end. She's tidying up all the loose ends, mm-hmm. and you see her. She is not a woman who is frail. And I love it because she's wearing a tank top, right?
Yeah.
It's called. And she's got muscles. She's cut.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's cut. And it shows like this woman is like, I was prepared for this. And I've been prepared for this whole time. Like I've never been a pushover. And you shouldn't have expected for me to be a pushover.
Right.
And it's a beautiful scene of just her visually.
Yes. So, definitely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's a tower.
Yeah.
And so a couple more things. I know it's a long review. A couple more things is that one is what did you think of the heist itself?
I liked it. Like I said, it made me feel like it was a really heist, a cool heist.
Yeah.
Obviously, the music does a good job. They always find good music to amp stuff up.
Yeah.
I really liked it. I like how nothing's perfect. It's their first time. And I love the heavy breathing that they bring into the aspect where they're obviously stressed. They're obviously scared. They're obviously, you know, mm-hmm. all emotions are rising. Adrenaline is in it 100%. The numbers are flipped. I thought about it right after the first mistake.
Yes.
I was like, you have it a fucking upside down.
Yeah.
And I loved it because I loved how they had the forethought to, they're smart. They're just freaking out at that moment. And you're like, no, flip it. And it's like, oh, fucking beautiful. And I like it. It's very tense. It's very edge of seat. I love how it was done.
And Robert Duvall, what do you think of that? How they shot him?
Yeah. He shot first though.
Oh yeah, totally. He shot first. Oh yeah.
I just think it was a deer in headlights moment for 100% agree. But and Viola Davis wouldn't be able to have done it.
Yeah,
I don't think Viola Davis would have been able to have done it. Do it.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that it was
Michelle Rodriguez.
Was it Michelle Rodriguez?
Yes, it was. I'm pretty sure. Or was it the baby? No, it was Michelle Rodriguez. The baby was driving.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Michelle Rodriguez.
Yeah. So the fact that it was one of the other person mm-hmm. made it more like. We're all in on this, and where you go weak, I get strong, or I can hold.
Yeah, I felt that way to me, like carrying the water for each
exactly.
other. But what do you think of it's like a secret prize or secret good thing to happen to have him die, Robert Duvall's character?
I feel like that's a little bit better for the fact that it would get what's his name. I can't think of the guy's name.
Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell's character, like almost like a reward for him being robbed.
Yeah, it's like we're gonna take this $5 million,
but we're gonna take your father.
We're gonna take the biggest anchor of your life away.
Right, exactly.
Yes. Okay.
So like it felt like we took your money, but at the same time,
yeah,
like you can do whatever you want now.
Yes,
without being pressured. So it almost felt like a reward for him.
Yeah, totally. And the Danica Lewis ending was really funny because like he staked these girls out to a point where he knew they were going to pull off this heist or try to pull it off. And he was ready to just take it away.
And he did.
Which reminds me of one of the short films from the Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Whatever.
Okay, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? The gold guy. He's like, here I am at the last chance taking away your money. And it all goes wrong for him. But they didn't plan for him. I thought they would have done like an Ocean's thing where they had him planned.
They didn't plan for him. And that's what I loved about it because they were like such rookie mistakes and everything like that. Yes. And it's like they had everything. The plan was there. Mm-hmm. It's just that they made rookie. This is the first time.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know.
But it still went their way. So it
still went their way?
Yes. That was great. Okay. And then the very ending where Viola Davis buys a library with the money, sees I should get her name. I didn't like her name. Elizabeth Debicki. I've been calling everyone by the real name. Alice. In the same
diner.
Yeah. What do you think of that scene, the ending of this movie? And what does it mean for you?
It means that they're going to rob more stuff.
You think so?
I think so. I think they had a rush. The look that they gave each other was like, hey, remember me? I took a bullet. And you're like, oh, yeah, hey. You know, it's kind of like that. But they also had a relationship. Mm-hmm. Out of them, they're the ones who formed the relationship.
Yeah.
She was the glue to both, right? She glued with Michelle Rodriguez and she glued with Viola Davis.
Yes.
Right? So but without her, it wouldn't have worked for both ways.
Yes. She had to convince the others, things like that.
She had to convince the others, yeah. And the other one, she leaned on her for that, right? So it worked out. So I think when they see each other, I think it was just like, we got away with something that people don't get away with. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I felt like they gave each other a look like, I think we could do this again.
Hmm.
It almost looked like that.
Okay.
So
I had a completely different thing.
What was it?
Almost the same though. And that's it's more like it's like two soldiers coming back from war years later and they see each other. Like we both went through some shit.
Yeah.
It was that kind of recognition for me. And I think they wanted to hang out to connect in a scenario that wasn't so stress filled. I think that's what it felt like. I didn't think of once that it would come back to crime.
Yeah.
But I hate it. That's cool. I like that. Anyway, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. Did the library thing come out of nowhere for you or no?
No.
Okay.
I mean, it was a surprise that what she wanted to do.
Yeah.
But it didn't come out of nowhere because of the fact that we had the whole backstory with the son.
Yeah. Gary Dale Hunt's death, the driver, pretty fucking cruel.
That was pretty fucking horrible. And that's a little scene that when he has a Super Bowl ring, a Bears Super Bowl ring, he's like, you play for the Bears?
Yeah.
And he's like, no, but it was a gift from Harry, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, what connections does this dead guy have? Like, who the fuck was he?
Yeah.
And it's just like,
he even gives that incredulous look like, how the?
Yeah. And it's like only, and you would expect that from Harry. Like,
yeah.
He's got some random hookup.
Yeah,
and getting to shit
get
like
you
this.
A fucking Super Bowl ring,
right?
Yeah, so like that.
Yeah, I like that. I like that scene. What's it called?
Yeah.
Shitty that he dies, because obviously he's going through.
And that's the scene where you show how pathological this guy is, because he just sits there and watches TV and puts the volume on loud so the narrators won't hear it.
Yeah,
like nothing. I think that was the scene when he starts talking a different language. Is that the scene where I'm thinking when he starts? No, right. No, it's not. Anyway.
Overall, great movie.
Great movie. We loved it. It's a pretty great movie. Widows, on theaters right now. Check it out. We're going to take a quick break, finally. We're going to come back. We'll discuss a Coen Brothers film, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Scruggs or Scraggs?
Scruggs, huh?
Scruggs.
Whatever.
Sorry. Stay with us.
People are so easily distracted. So I'm the distractor. With a little story.
People can't get enough of them.
Because, well, they connect the stories to themselves, I suppose. And we all love hearing about ourselves. So long as the people in the stories are us. But not us.
This'll tell the tale.
Buster Scruggs.
You're shooting iron work.
Appears to do, yes.
Do you have anything to say before sentence is carried out?
Sentence? What's my sentence?
An anthology film comprised of six stories, each dealing with a different aspect of life in the Old West, according to the Coen brothers. I added the last bit. But yes, this is The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, which is just I'm going to say it right now, it is just the title of the first short of this anthology series. And it is directed by them as well, only. Written by them as well. Story by two people who had written two of the other stories. So Jack London did the story of the All Gold Canyon, and the gal who got rattled. It was written by a different person, like an original story that they adapted into a short seller.
Okay.
So that's what I'm going to say that right now. And this film stars a lot of people that you know, most of them character actors. These guys are really good at casting character actors, which has like Tim Blake Nelson, Clancy Brown, was Tim Desarne, a lot of fucking people. you know, was it Liam Neeson's in the movie? James Franco, Stephen Root, Ralph Ineson, which I like a lot. He's a cool actor. Richard Boucher, yes. Anyway, bunch of actors, bunch of people. So, oh, Tom Waits. That's right. Tom Waits in this movie.
James Franco.
Zoe Kazan. Yeah, I said her. Anyway, pretty cool stuff. Zoe Kazan, right? Anyway, so this movie is 6 short stories. The way we're going to do it, I think we'll first say as a whole what we thought about it without spoiling anything. And then I think we're just getting to spoilers right after that.
I think we're just going to freely talk about any
short as we want to. I don't know if we're not going to mention. We probably mention all of them, but I don't know how much in depth we'll get into all of them. We'll just wing it, see where it goes.
Yeah.
Because this is kind of weird to review a movie like this. So, my thoughts is that this movie is fucking great. I love it. I mean, I'm not into old West stuff. I'm not like Luke where I hate them or like it's like Western as a genre is not a genre that I specifically seek out, but I've never denied them. Never say, oh, Western. No, I'm always like, okay, yeah, Western. That's fine. I can see it. But I don't seek it out. It ain't my number one genre, but I like it a lot. And there are some really great fucking Western movies out there also. So I have a pretty good setup.
I agree.
Coen Brothers have made like 3 of those pretty great Westerns, honestly. Although No Country for Old Men feels like a Western, but it isn't.
It's not, yeah. I know, it's like a modern day Western.
Yeah, right. But True Grit, great movie.
Yeah.
This is great. These short stories, you know, you feel like it has a little bit for someone, a little bit for everything, for everybody. It has something that anyone can like. It has musical set pieces, it has action set pieces. Actually, the first one has both at the same time. It has, you know, comedy, darkness. It has for sure some darkness. That stuff that make you think. It has a twist and it has turns. It has murder, betrayal. It has the gold rush in it somewhere. It has, you know, the day-to-day lifestyle of things. It has Indians in there. It has everything you want. Virtually everything you want. Obviously, not everything they made, you know. But I think it's a little bit something for everyone. And I liked it a lot. What do you think?
I'm mostly inclined to agree with you. A lot of death in the West.
I think every story has a death.
A lot of death. So I like it also how it's... I feel like every story has something to do with like Western lore or Western, what is that? I can't think of that. No. It's just like, yeah, I guess legends if you want to look at it. Like okay. Something, yeah, like that. Or, I can't think of the word when it comes to me. I'll say it again. But anyways, it has to do with something that's like a typecast of the Western stuff that happens.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So every story has that in it. Like, has to have something in it. Like one with the Oregon Trail and, you know, like shit like that. It's like, I find it funny. It worked out.
Yeah.
Like any Coen movie, like it could go either way. It could go either really dramatic, horror-ish, right? To just
say horror?
Horror.
Oh,
horror-ish.
Okay. Horror.
Horror. No, horror-ish or really, really funny.
Yeah, they do both really well.
They do both really well.
Think of what's that gangster movie we like? Miller's Crossing.
Miller's Crossing, yeah.
That's both things. Really darkness and really funny shit in there.
I agree. Overall, I did like the movie. I didn't know it was an anthology until after the first one ended. And I was like, oh, well, how's this movie going to continue? And it's the next part. And I was like, and then after the next one, I was like, oh, it's a bunch of short stories. Yes. Oh, okay. Then why is it called The Ballad of Buster Scruggs? And I was like,
yeah,
whatever.
I actually have an answer for that.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
He sings a lot. He sings about stories. And I think if I go back and we watch the movie, one of the songs he sings, it's probably about one of the short stories we saw already.
I wouldn't be surprised.
So, like, what if these are just, like, his playlist? You know what I mean? Like, he has sung about all these different types of people and different types of stories.
That's what I thought it was.
And that's why you just call it by the first one. But that's, I don't know. But a lot of movies do that, though. Old-fashioned movies, when they did an anthology series or old-fashioned serials, they would just name it from the first episode. Name the entire thing from the... It's like Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones is not the name of the series.
I know it's not.
But it's the name of the first book.
I know.
Yeah.
It's called A Game of Thrones. Anyways, I liked the first one. I like the musical aspect of it. It was really funny.
Did you laugh? How good
I did. I did laugh. So, it was really good. He was so on good. The table. He was so good at it. Anyways, I like it because everything they say, like, there's a little bit of everything for everyone. Just like you said earlier, there's in the movie. So it's, I don't know. Like, you can't complain. Like, the worst in one part could be the best for somebody else. Mm-hmm. So like, mm-hmm. I can't knock it for that. But overall, I think they did a good job. I just wasn't expecting. I want to rewatch this movie. I want to rewatch this movie.
Me too.
Just for the fact that I want to see. I think I still knows which one's polite, which one I would like better. But at the same time, I want to catch like little things because they dropped a lot of. It's the Coen Brothers. They drop a lot of subtle shit in there, and rewatches are always a must with Coen Brothers.
Always.
Always. Always.
Hail Caesar works better as a rewatch.
Oh my god, it really does.
Everything works better.
So yeah. So like I said, I definitely want to rewatch this movie before the year ends. See where I fall in line with this movie. But it was cool. It was a cool, fun thing to watch. Definitely. That's for sure what it was.
Definitely. And unless you're like some sort of like you're like anal or allergic to Westerns, which no one is really. I mean, no such thing as that. I mean,
yeah.
It's just a setting, guys.
Right.
It doesn't mean anything.
Right.
Everyone should like it. I recommend it for everyone out there. So those are 2 cents. I think we should get into spoilers.
I think we should, yeah.
So quick into spoilers for Ballad of Buster Scruggs starting right now.
Ranchman's Gulch. This town is new to me.
Hold on, son. House policy.
Here's the six shooter.
You'll be wanting the Senorita pistols as well?
Everything. House policy.
Feel a bit naked, but I guess with everyone similarly disadvantaged, there's scant chance of misadventure.
I'm out.
Well, this is well timed. You gentlemen mind if I take his spot?
If you play his hand.
I would prefer not to.
It is too late. You have regarded the cards.
You seen them, you play them.
So they all die. Everyone dies.
Everyone dies. I mean, for the most part, you're not wrong.
And some die from dysentery.
So the first two, the first and the last short story, I don't know if you noticed, are the only ones with a tinge of supernatural to it. There's a magical to it. There's a magic realism to it.
Yeah.
So the first one, obviously, because he is the number one, which reminds me of what's that anime? Afro Samurai.
Yeah.
Number one and number two. It totally reminded me of that. So remember, he's number one for a long time. He's like, the first time he killed all those guys, like, oh, damn. And the second time, he's like, you keep raising the stakes. Oh, damn. How is he that good? And then, you know, he gets taken down. He doesn't even feel that bad about it. He's like, you know what? I can't be at the top forever. Right. He's like, and he's off. He literally show him wings flying up with a harp. It's so literal and so funny and kind of jovial and like so much violence. Though.
Yeah, so like, much violence. So many people die.
Many people die in the first story.
Although, yeah. God damn, I wish I was in, what's it called? What are those guys called? I hear
Gamblers?
No. The guys who pick up the dead people.
Or the
morticians.
You think it was them?
What?
Oh, wait. No, wait. No, go ahead.
I think it was who?
I thought, could it be them from the end of the...
No, I didn't look like that. I would have recognized it. No. Great business to be in the West. Fucking amazing.
He even says it.
I know.
He even says that. I should have gotten into this business because they're taking my skill and they're making a profit off my skill for killing all these people. Yeah, great. I think it's a great opening. But it does kind of tell you that you're going to see a lot more of this kind. It doesn't warn you of anything. It kind of feels like it would be of this kind. But the rest of the stories are all realistic as far as it can be.
As far as it can be, yeah.
And realistic is to the point.
Well, in comparison to the first. The first one is very comical and very...
fancy.
It feels unrealistic.
Yeah.
But the story is saying feels realistic,
mm-hmm.
where there's always someone better than you. You know, that is a story.
Right.
So someone is always going to be better than you.
Yes.
That's the realistic part of it. But the unrealistic part of it is how he deals with shit is just really funny.
Yeah.
And they do it in the right way with the poker game. He wasn't even trying to get in a fight with the poker one.
Nope, he just won a piece of him.
Right. You and know. He had a good hand.
Yeah. And he didn't want to play.
I think he was playing. I think he was playing the fact like, oh, I don't want to play because, you know, like force him to win. Yeah, I think he was.
Or could it be like that Frenchman in the last story said, not you can't play another person's hand. It's their hand.
Yeah, it could be. It could be both.
It could be that.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, there's some connections in these stories. We definitely got to watch it again.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the last one where it feels like these three, technically five people, are being sent from their living world to the underworld because it feels that way.
Right.
It's very dark, very maudlin. It gets like gloomy. The stories are all about what their perceptions of humanity is, which is very mortal-like. It seems like an old-fashioned fucking Greek god story, you know, kind of like a parable or something. On their way to Damascus, you know?
Yeah.
And what do you think of that whole conversation? The whole thing is one carriage, so what do you think?
Well, I find that the tropes in the movie with there's the one guy who's talking, he's just rambling off shit.
And he says, like, they find me tedious. I'm like, yes.
Yes. Yes. And he's like, I had a wife or whatever. I never knew her name. Like, what the fuck is going on?
Some Indian girl.
Right, exactly. Some Indian girl.
They're so good with dialogue.
They are. It was really funny.
These guys.
I like it, though. But then the super trope of this woman who was like, well, my husband is this, and that. And I was just like,
decent people love each other only.
Yeah, exactly. And you're like, okay, whatever, dude. It was just like, she's like annoying, utterly annoying.
Yeah.
And like hasn't come to terms with like, she's been gone for how many years?
3 years.
Yeah, like, and you sure he wants you back?
Sure,
like,
the daughter even wanted you there?
Right, exactly. Sure, like that was really good conversation right there.
Yes.
Like, she's like, no daughter ever wants to have their mother.
Their parents living with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he wasn't wrong. But so it's almost like the question we should be asking, or the audience should be asking themselves, is that who is the worser person? Who is the person you find most annoying, and who is the worser person? Is that the same person?
Yeah, that's a good question, because what are you looking for there? Like, they all have their faults, and why are they...
The gambler guy is way too brusque about it, what he's saying, and he's clearly like a sinner in a way, right?
Yeah.
He has vices that he doesn't apologize for. Not that he should necessarily. Is that wrong? Is that not? No. So many questions you could ask.
Yeah. The guy goes to the carriage because they... What do they do to the old lady? They spooked her, right? Or they...
Yes.
They got her worked up all the way where she couldn't breathe.
Yes, that's right.
That's what it was. And I thought she was choking on something, but she was like lack of air. Like, oh my God, like she got so worked up.
She got worked up.
Exactly. So you got to stop. And he's like, this guy doesn't stop. He never stops.
Her dainty disposition. And he never stops. When they were saying it so ominously, like, this carriage doesn't stop. I'm like, what?
And you're like, what the fuck?
And he never showed his face. He never showed the driver's face.
But it could have been like he was like a headless horseman kind of thing. Or
Chiron.
Like a Reaper or something. Yeah. Chiron. Yeah, man. It was really weird.
Yeah. It was so cool.
It was cool, yeah.
Because they also could not be. It also could just be one giant thing of these people learning lessons about each other and their way of lives. And these two guys are just like really good at being creepy and bounty
hunters. Well, they even say it themselves. They're like, well, yeah, we kind of have a thing, you know, a shtick going.
Right. He distracts them while he thumps them.
Yeah.
You know? It's funny. It's great because it could be either way.
It could.
But I still kind of choose because the ending is so...
You do want to see it the other way, yeah. For sure.
So, the underworld. A really good story. Really good ending for it because it feels like appropriate ending. So let's talk about some of the middle stories. What's your favorite? If there isn't one of these...
Okay. Stories. I like the... I think the most serene is the Goldingy one.
Oh, yes,
so,
of course.
I love
A Man in Nature.
Yeah, A Man in Nature.
Good. I love
it. But it's like the guy's like, oh, okay, there's some gold here. And I love like the amount of effort he puts in. And I was like, wow, this guy knows what he's doing. Go figure. Like,
yes.
I could, and I'm thinking of him in the back. I'm like, I can think this guy growing old and be like, I worked for this gold. Yeah, you fucking did.
Yeah, you fucking did. You spent the 3 days.
Sure, you found it, right?
Yeah.
Sure, but you worked for it.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like... That's
I never knew how prospectors did it. You know, like that makes sense,
right? He's like, oh, I'm gonna get you a pocket, right?
He called something pocket.
It was a pocket.
Just no, it wasn't pocket. It was something pocket. Empty pocket.
No.
Side
pocket.
Side pocket. Thank
you. I'm gonna find you side pocket. Yeah,
I'm gonna find you. He has just two names to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when the guy comes in, he notices it, and I saw it right away.
He knew instantly.
He knew instantly. That's why he shakes his head. And he gets shot. Man, I was so mad.
I was so fucking mad.
I was so mad. I was like, this motherfucker did not just put in all that work.
Yeah.
I'd be livid. I would be livid.
Yes.
Be turning in my grave, right? Like, so livid.
Damn.
And then,
no, but they did a reversal on you.
And then they did a reversal.
See, this movie has a bunch of reversals like that. Yeah. It's like three or four. Right. Probably one per story when you think about
it. He gets so mad. He's like, you shot me.
Yeah.
He's like, you take my hard work.
And right. And he's watching. And he's like, it went clean through. You had nothing vital.
Yeah.
He made it out.
Yeah.
And that was the reversal, that you think he wouldn't have made it out, because you know that the Coen brothers will always throw you something.
Yeah.
And you just don't know what. And you don't know how to feel. Yeah. Which goes to my favorite story, which is the second longest one, the second to the last one. Where I forget the name of it. Fuck me, I just had it here. Give me one.
Oh, the Oregon Trail one.
Yeah, the gal who got rattled. That's probably the original name of the story. I don't know if that's the name of the short story they called it. But that was my favorite because it had such a great build-up. It took a while. But this story is about this girl who isn't necessarily shy, but is has always been reserved and doesn't really talk to a lot of people, or at least had the practice. She calls it something,
I would say,
herself.
Too sheltered.
Yeah, sheltered maybe, never seen the world. And, you know, unfortunately, the sins of her brother who dies in the beginning, towards the beginning of the thing.
He dies of dysentery.
Is that what he does?
Isn't it?
No, I thought he just coughs.
Oh, I guess so.
Like a wicked cough. Like they called it something. I don't remember. It's like a cough that like killed a lot of people back then. And so it starts with this the problems of this woman being on this trail, going somewhere that she knows nothing about. And that alone brings conflict, of course. I feel bad for her. And she's trying to figure out, and the stable boy that's supposed to help her is under the guise of they're supposed to pay, but based on what the brother said, but the brother's dead, so who can vouch for that? The money's gone because it was buried with the brother. All these problems that she goes to the handyman for. It isn't the handyman number one, it's not his number two. And they develop a relationship over time. And the movie takes its breathers.
It does.
It does take sweet time for it. And you don't know what to expect and when to expect it. You don't know what to expect, even, which is the power of the length of this movie, of the short, which is why I liked it so much. And we get to that ending, man, which is like three reversals in one sitting. Well, two of them. And with the Indians attack. And she's stuck with the number one guy who barely says a word. He only says a word when he has to.
Oh, man. And when he says a word, he's ready.
Dude, he's ready.
Well, you know what? Yeah. I really like that. I really like what he does is that he steps in. He goes looking for her because he knows it's so important for his partner.
Yes.
And he
does give a shit.
He does give a shit.
He doesn't have to fucking say it all.
Exactly. Yes. It's just that he's your typical, what's it called? Typical cowboy.
Yes, he is.
That's exactly what he
at
is.
At least typical to what you know people think of cowboys.
Exactly.
As a typical one, like High Noon Cowboy, not 3:10 Yuma Cowboy. Very few people got that reference. But anyway, it's so when he gets to that, he fucking goes into action. He knows exactly what to do, what most likely will happen with the horses if the Indians are following.
I mean, he's answering. He says everything was going to happen.
Yes, he does. And
at the lay of the land.
And dude, the first twist, I was like, oh my God. I didn't see it coming. Even though I know the Coens and I should have seen something coming. That horse, when it was like, walking by itself, and then that cowboy was on the other side, the Indian was on the other side, came up with a hammer or a hatchet. And
yeah, it looked like a hatchet.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. It was one of those rock pointy things. And dude hits him like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
And like, and everything he described to her, what would happen to her if she doesn't kill herself, you know, was like in my head in that moment. Because like, oh shit, come on, right? And obviously some of that's probably just exaggerated shit just to make Indians look more evil, but whatever. And I thought that would happen, and then he does a reversal and shoots him.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, he was playing possum in a way, just like Tom Waits was.
Just exactly, yeah. I was like, ooh, callback!
Yes.
Yeah.
And then when he sees her dead there, I was like so heartbroken. It was so heartbroken. That was my favorite story because it was so heartbroken.
It was because like he did everything. He struggled through it. Yeah. And I like that. Did you read the thing of the book?
Yes. It's with the opening. This is the first story thing was about that.
Yeah. So the end of the book, it was like, I think the last line, he's like, and he doesn't know what he's going to tell his partner.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's shitty.
Dude.
Yeah. It was a harsh story. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other story that I did like, I found funny just because of James Franco, is
the pot guy.
Yeah.
Pan.
Yeah.
He kept saying
pan.
It's a good defense, though.
Yeah, it was a good defense.
He's a really good bank teller.
It was really funny because.
He's a devoted bank teller.
I found it really funny because when he gets caught, like he gets saved by that guy who's stealing cattle, right? And then he ends up going to. You know, and he doesn't even go. He doesn't even get a trial technically.
No,
he just gets a. Oh, like what did he do? We caught him doing this. That's good enough for me. Boom, hang him. Like, and then the guy's crying. He's like, "This is your first time getting hanged." But it's like the look that James Franco gives is so funny.
It's so funny. And he's like looking at the crowd for a beautiful girl, which is back then why they would often send, that's like a real thing apparently, where sometimes the mothers would send their beautiful daughter to that kind of thing so the men could have one last thing to look at before, one last beautiful thing to look at. Apparently that was like a thing.
Is that?
In some places, yeah, it's when crazy. They could hang in. That's not an unusual thing. I've read it before. I know it's not my first time.
Okay.
So, but I love how he just locked on it and are like, I just want to see some. Yeah,
and then you hear neck cracking. I'm like, oh, sweet Jesus.
Like, Jesus, yes.
Yeah.
That was
it's just funny.
Funny.
He went through all that struggle, and he's like, I made it. And then he's like, fuck. God. Yeah.
Yes.
But it is a short one, and the funny parts is, like, it looks like this rundown shitty bank, and it looks great on the inside. And then you walk out, it looks like it's a set.
Yeah.
It looks like you could just push the thing over, and it falls over.
Right, like one of those Hollywood things.
Yeah. But I don't know. It's one of the weaker stories for sure, but it's still funny.
Oh, it's hella funny.
That's exactly what that is.
I think we're missing one.
We're missing one more. Do you remember it?
Off the top of my head, I do not remember. Can you remind me?
So what do we got? Buster Scruggs.
Tell me. Okay. You're being like this already. I can tell.
Huh?
Just tell me. I don't remember. You're not going to tell me, are you?
No.
Come on. Well, dude, we're doing a show.
Do we have another one?
I don't know. I'm pretty sure we do. I think we mentioned 5. See? Look, we're not saying anything.
Do, 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 do.
Oh, the saddest one probably.
Do, 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 do.
Meal ticket,
do,
right?
Do, 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 do,
that's what we're missing? Yeah, meal ticket. That's the one with the guy with no arms and no legs.
Yeah.
Yeah, what do you think of that one?
That was rough.
That was super rough.
No, okay.
My God.
I want to say that's the weakest one.
No, I almost want to say I could be argued for the strongest one.
I want to say it's the weakest because, and I say it as like first when you get everything else, because everything else has something enjoyable. That's the problem with this one.
I think this one is
so the reason I bring this one up is like it gets so monotonous, and I think what especially because like the first time you see him and you're like, oh wow, that's crazy, okay, and then the second time you're like, oh, okay, so obviously that's just shtick, whatever, and then you're like, getting a little bit too much here, buddy. But that's on our end, right?
Yes,
and that's on our end. That's fine because we're not. He's going town to town, right?
Right.
So not a problem, right? And then when he gets to that chicken game, and when you see the contrast of like people just want to see dumb shit, like we don't want intellect, we just want dumb shit.
That's you getting close to something. Why I think this might be the most
right.
One.
So no, it's funny. Yeah. It's funny because if you start thinking about it, right, it's there. And I'm like, poor guy, he went through all of this shit, and like he has all of this. He's well read, you know, well whatever.
Mm-hmm. He's hella
well read, well spoken, well read, well spoken.
Yeah.
Still living for some reason, like no arms, no legs. Fuck that.
But it opens with him being found in the forest, right?
Yeah, something weird. Yeah.
Somebody, probably the idea that someone left them there because it's too annoying, or too boring, or not making them enough money, or whatever.
Yeah.
Like the same thing happened, but Liam Neeson took it farther.
Yeah.
Dude, it's so sad because it's
sad.
It's a metaphor for how we see entertainment.
It is
it's exactly what the Coen Brothers
think. It is. I agree with that. You see that there. But and it's what's the fucked up part is when he tests the rock.
Oh, dude.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Jesus. That part was so dark because he's like, and I hate to laugh, but.
No, it's so dark, but you laugh also
because he sees
wearing the makeup. He has no arms. He has the
bridge.
No
he sees the bridge where like this train would go through, right?
Yeah,
and I'm like, oh, okay. I
knew instantly.
I wonder what he's gonna do.
I knew it.
I wonder what he's gonna. I thought he was gonna go piss. He's like, I just want to piss above the thing. And I was like, and then I saw him grab a rock. I was like, he is not. And I was like, that is so fucked up. And then the guy's looking like, what's happening?
No, I was
like,
oh, man. Dude, no, he knew.
He fucking knew.
He knew when it stopped. I knew when it stopped.
Yeah.
He was just like. He was playing the mental gymnastics to just accept it because he can't get away. He can't do anything.
No, he can't. Yeah.
And I felt so morbidly bad, and then I was laughing about it. It was so stupid. It's the weirdest conflict I've ever had in my life. is feeling sad for this boxing Helena.
Yeah.
You know?
That's so weird, man.
Oh, my God. It's so fucking weird.
See, that's why I want to rewatch these, because it's... And
it also looks like a mime a little bit, the way he paints him up. I'm like, come on. Yeah. You're killing me. Yeah. It's probably the best story, but like, or the most influential or something. But it's not my favorite, but it's like probably the best one, probably. Man, it's so... I don't know what to think. I need to see it again, but it'll just make me sad. It's so hard. It's so depressing. And he chose the chicken. He chose the... Yeah.
Although they don't show it, we know what happens.
Oh, yeah. They don't have to.
They don't have to.
They show the empty carriage with just the chicken.
Exactly.
That's it.
That's all you
have. Not even that. I mean, yeah. But yeah. If it ended with a fade out on his face.
We would have done.
Yeah. So that is the... I think that's it for the Ballad of the Buster Scruggs.
I think so, yeah. It's cool. It's a good,
fun time, and also morbid as fuck time.
Yeah, it's a fun time. It's a fun time for sure.
Yes. So check it out. It's on Netflix right now. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll review our last film of the evening, which is Hook. Hook. Stay with us.
Hook.
The stories are true. He's come back to seek his revenge. Only you can save your children. You must make yourself remember.
Remember what?
Peter, don't you know who you are?
Have to fly. Have to fight. Have to crow. Have to save Maggie. Have to save Jack. Hawkeye's back.
Who? When Captain Hook kidnaps Pan's children, an adult Peter must return to Neverland and reclaim his youthful spirit in order to challenge his old enemy.
It's never Neverland?
Whatever. This is directed by Steven Spielberg, because if not, why would we be reviewing this movie? Hmm. Starring Dustin Hoffman as Hook.
Is that really him?
Yeah. Robin Williams as Peter Banning.
Peter Banning.
Julia Roberts as Tinkerbell, or Tink.
I forgot she was in this fucking movie.
I didn't. It was one of the most memorable parts of me. I always remember Julia Roberts as Tinkerbell. Anyways, Bob Hoskins as Shmee.
Now, Bob Hoskins, I remember.
Yeah, I know. Maggie Smith as Granny Wendy. She totally fits that.
Dude, Maggie Smith is 90 years old forever.
Forever.
Dude.
Caroline Goodall as Moira Banning. Moira. I like the name.
Okay.
And then there's kids, but who cares about them?
Yeah, fuck the kids. Although I think one of them is definitely a bigger star right now. The first thing when I saw this movie is that I was really sad that, man, Maggie Smith is still alive and Robin Williams passed away. You know?
Holy shit, yeah.
Huh. Anyway, so...
So this movie's long.
Why did you pick this movie?
That's a good question.
Yes.
I picked this movie because... I didn't want just to pick heavy... Because I've seen all these movies. I've seen Hook before. And I've seen Hook, but I haven't seen it since maybe 6 years. Easy. Mm-hmm. To the fullest. I've seen it in clips. I'm like, yeah, that's the scene with the thing. Perfect. You know? But I haven't seen it in like 6 years since I saw the whole movie. And I remember there's a what's that thing called? There is a this lightness to the movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Childish, I guess, like spectacles of this movie. It wants to drag you into that. I think that's literally the whole first half of this movie is to drag you into the fact that you need to use your imagination in a literal and what's it called? Movie aspect. So And I wanted to bring it up because I don't want to watch. I didn't want to watch all his war movies and super depressing movies. That's another reason as well. So I wanted to pick something else that was a little bit more lighthearted in his collection.
Well, we have a mixed bag for sure.
We do have a mixed bag, yeah.
And this coming up. Although coming up is the next three depressing ones.
Right, go for it.
Well, that's depressing, just, you know, serious and stuff.
Yeah.
I think Hook is it's one of those go-to movies for a lot of kids who were born in the 80s to either revisit or rewatch because they love it. It's always one of those nostalgia fun movies.
It feels like the Goonies.
It is the Goonies. It is also like the Sandlot. It is like Adventures in Babysitting. All these titles that keep coming up here and there is because of the kids who were around as kids when Hook came out.
Yeah,
movies like Hook came out. So I think it's just in that zeitgeist of memory, nostalgia memory, and. I myself was a victim of it not recently, but like 10 years ago, I was like nostalgic about this movie. I don't remember anything about it, but I remember like thinking like, oh yeah, totally, it's a good movie.
Well, what's funny
but
is...
Like, I look back on it, I mean, even having rewatched it, but before seeing it this week, I was like, I don't think there's anything good in that movie. You know, like it went away, the nostalgia of it. But not to say there's bad parts in this movie. I knew that guy was what's that actor who plays Hook? You just said his name.
Hoffman?
Yeah, Dustin Hoffman. I knew it was Dustin Hoffman, but I was like, is it though? I kept questioning myself. Yeah. Like, is that really him? Why is this movie called Hook?
This is a continuation of the original Peter Pan movie. So this is technically a part two. So and it's called Hook. Because basically Peter Pan in the movie becomes Hook in the beginning of like he's Hook in the real world.
Hook as in someone who
he's a pirate in the movie, and he's I need to do this, and he needs to and grumpy about things and all these other things that Hook is.
I think if they did more of the focus more on the movie, I mean, it focuses more on the duality between Peter Pan and Hook.
I think they do a decent job. They don't do a great job.
As I'm saying, more of that.
I
think this movie could have been real something.
Yeah, and what I also, I know the main message of the movie is like, play with your kids. It's like, pay attention. It's like, and that's something, that's a big message in British culture. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yes, Christopher Robin.
Yeah.
Do you remember Christopher Robin? I mean, Hook. Do you remember? Is it Hook I'm talking about or Christopher Robin?
Yeah.
They both are exactly the same to me.
Yeah, but one came out way before the other one.
Yes. And also one is live action more than the other. I know they're both live action.
Well, this one has just great set pieces too. So.
Yeah, this one has a... It must have been fun coloring the set.
For sure.
And also, who makes that food?
I don't know. But it's still a really powerful scene, that scene.
The imaginary food fight?
Yeah.
Oh, that turns into a real food
fight. Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that's the only scene I remember.
Yeah.
Before watching it, obviously, I was like, I definitely have to rewatch this movie. I was thinking the whole time because like I don't remember anything except for the food fight, and I was like, yeah, that food fight really works.
Yeah.
That's the only example you can need it for the imagination thing.
Yeah.
But did this movie did it merit the 2.5 hour?
That's a good question. I just think it takes way too long in the beginning, to be really honest with you, in this real life of like showing that he's trying to make an effort, but he's not. He's just really caught up with it. Like you could have
seemed like they do a few of those.
You could have shortened that. Like we did the baseball, then we did the baseball game, and then we did the what's it called? Not in the airplane, but later on in the right before they get kidnapped.
The phone thing, right?
Yeah. And then the phone thing is like pick one or the other. You know, like we didn't need both scenarios. I get why they're there, but like you're like beating a dead horse. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. Another thing about it is that besides the setup, I think also this movie does revel in having a lot of like set pieces, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. It is meant for I guess kids or young adults. So like, I guess I don't feel too bad about that, or I can't say fault the movie for that. But I do think that. A shorter, snappier intro to get to the world. Even in Never Never Land, he spends most of the time like, where's your lawyer? I'm an accountant. He's saying all this shit. Like, come on. At least pretend you know where you are here.
Yeah.
you know, like, it takes too much time for that. Yeah, cut that shit out or at least get there faster. Definitely would have made this movie probably a lot more swallowable. Are we going to have a spoiler section for this movie? I'm not
sure. I mean, it's an old movie.
No. I mean, I'm not saying we shouldn't because it's an old movie. I'm just saying we shouldn't because, like, do we need it? We probably don't have to talk about the ending to describe what we think about this movie.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I don't think we do.
So I don't think this movie, it worked out a little better than I thought because I did think it was going to completely bomb on me. It didn't bomb on me. It was like Robin Williams is giving it his all. He's a very surprisingly weird actor sometimes. He can do serious and really funny, obviously, at the same time. I think he was really good as a leading man. And I do think that one thing that I found ridiculous, too ridiculous, is that Hulk's plan to make his son turn against him. And by basically having a mini Hulk, oh my God, when he had his own little leg, I was like, that's adorable. But like, come on, it's been 2 days. Oh, by that time it was 3 days. But whatever, you know, like, come on. And also like, I don't understand also like the rules of them bridging our world to theirs. I'm like, if he hates this place so much, we just go to the real world. I don't understand. Like, just go there.
Yeah.
Kind of wanted to see him defeat the alligator because that's a big important thing in the original play. That's a super important
thing. It is, but we're talking about, because it does happen.
Off-screen, like off-screen,
yeah. Movies. It happens between movies, yeah.
And
He's got nothing else to do because he doesn't have Peter Pan to fight.
Right, and that's another thing is that you think of that old samurai thing, like if you don't have your enemy, why even be a samurai kind of thing?
Yeah.
As a kind of mentality to it. That was kind of cool, the feudal thing. And but it goes to ridiculous places, but I like how it does it. And the I like how his comeuppance comes with the alligator. That was great because it was like it was always meant to be.
It was always meant to be, exactly
right, yeah. Dead or alive. That alligator was going to do it. But yeah, I liked overall the movie. Didn't love it. I probably wouldn't watch it again. Not for a long time until I forget it again. But I was really surprised at how much more I liked it than I thought I would.
Yeah, it is still one of those movies that if you saw it as a kid, you're going to love it a lot. Like just like you said earlier, The Sandlot, The Goonies. It fits in that vein of that type of movie.
I find myself not liking those songs. I'm not a big fan of Goonies.
Yeah, well, I find myself not liking them as much as I thought I did, or as I thought I should.
Yeah.
I guess I should. This is a better one to say.
Maybe. Sandlot also. Like, it's just a baseball.
Yeah.
No, I get it.
Okay. Not Lost Boys. Stand By Me.
Stand By Me. That one I saw as a kid, though.
Oh.
I didn't see it as a kid. Okay. I saw it older.
Okay.
I do dig that movie, though.
Yeah. It's a good movie.
Avengers of Everything I do still dig, though, in my head, so I'll probably watch that at some point.
Yeah.
Shatter that. Yeah.
Yeah, I just think in this one, you still have that whole imagination thing. I think they just drive it too much during the middle of it. Like, you obviously, that scene is still great, but they take way too long with him learning how to fly and learning how to do things and learning how to do all these things. Like we don't need that because in the end, you rush it anyway because he gets hit in the head and then it's done. And I'm like, well, what the hell? Like, it felt like we just rushed it when we were – he's never going to get it, and then he gets it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's weird how people start forgetting things the longer you stay in Neverland. Like,
yeah, such a weird thing.
They don't explain that, like, nope. But it's explained – like, we're supposed to just know?
Yeah, I think it relies too much on magic or not, like hocus pocusy stuff to ever get into.
And I feel like they don't force the relationship, but I feel like they have to give the time for the relationship between Peter and Tinkerbell.
Yeah. Although, this girl, Julia Roberts, really charming as a Tinkerbell.
Very charming, yes.
It totally worked. One thing I want to mention for sure before we stop it, the review, is that Bob Hoskins as Smee, more complicated than Hook, that guy. He's got something going on there. That guy is dresses like an idiot, but is way smarter than he is. He is a classic pirate. Like, if you give him an inch, he'll steal. Like, it's almost like he's the type that he would have to steal from Hook a little bit, or else Hook wouldn't respect him. And you know, when he thought the ship was going to go down or Hook was going to get whatever, he starts stealing immediately. He immediately goes into his shed. Like, he's taking bite out of all his food before he gives it to him. Yeah. Like, he's a weirdo. And also, like, they have a codependent domestic abuse situation going on. because like he threatens to kill himself, and Smee is basically saying, "Not this again! You just do it!" Like it's like not stopping him until he tells him to stop him with a gunpoint. Yeah,
Smee, stop me.
Yeah, and then blames
don't stop me, Smee, stop me.
And then blames him for not stopping him earlier. Yeah. I'm like, that's fucked up, bro. That's really fucked up. That's so bad. That's some wife beater shit going on there.
Yeah.
Anyway, I did want to mention that for sure. But that's all I got to hook. I don't have much, man.
Yeah.
So we should cut it there?
I think we can.
Okay. So that's Hook, and that's available. Unfortunately, it's still too expensive, but you can buy it on DVD for way cheaper than it is online.
Like $5. You can't. $5 everywhere. Everywhere. On DVD.
Right. So that's it for our show. You have been listening to another movie podcast. Don't forget to send us feedback at podmoviecast@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of Hook, Widows, or The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, or any other movie for that matter. You can also follow me personally at Letterboxd and on Twitter. Sorry, that's Armin Filmmaker, which is Filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Ruff?
You can follow me at Gamer Ralph. That is with two R's and an F.
Are you sure?
Yes.
All right, awesome. You're right. And then next time, we are a biweekly show. Next time in 2 weeks, we'll be reviewing Creed 2.
Yep.
Or Crude.
No, and then, it's just Creed 2. Why is it Crude?
Huh? Because you put the...
The lowlion in the skin or something?
T-W-O, like the W-O part.
You're so special. You're so special.
That's why I've been calling it.
Oh, you're so dumb. And then Ralph Breaks the Internet. Yeah. Wreck-It Ralph 2. That's the name of the movie.
I know. I'm telling you, these titles are stupid. You guys know you agree with me when I rant.
I do agree with you.
But nobody wants to rant with me.
No, I do agree with you, but I'm just saying. Yeah. That's why I meant an emphasis of it. Right. So we're watching two sequels. We'll see which one's the better one.
Yeah, we'll compare them then. And we're watching another sequel after that, Schindler's List.
That's not a sequel.
No, it's not, I guess. Schindler's List, which is, I think, the third week in a row we're talking about a Liam Neeson movie.
Liam Neeson is in everything.
Third show in a row.
Everything. Third that guy's got to be a baller. Like,
dude, that guy doesn't stop working.
No, he doesn't.
He's in Widows and Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Yeah.
And I won't be surprised if it was an extra in Hook or something. Some extra pirate at the fucking back or something. Anyway, those are reviews for next time. Until then, I am Oscar and you are?
Ralph.
See you later.
With an F, not a PH.
Yeah, fuck that shit.